This is PFW in Progress.
Here's a nice piece of s***.
PFW in Progress.
Poop again!
He caught the s***.
This is the best night of my life.
With Red Kirsch.
Shut up!
Paul Perillo.
Where's my snack pack?
You got a banana. You don't need no snack pack.
You know I like snack pack. Why can't you just give me a snack pack?
And Andy. And Andy?
Whoa. Part of the story I don't like is that the little boy gave up looking for Happy after an hour. That little boy's got to think you got a pet. You got a responsibility.
Andy Hart.
If your dog is lost, you don't look for an hour then call it quits. You get your ass out there and you find that dog.
Some guy named Tom.
I am the smartest man alive!
And you never know, Rory might stop by.
Oh, I want to touch the hiney.
PFW in Progress.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
Rambling and incoherent, Tom. They haven't heard anything yet. We haven't even started rambling and incoherent.
Luke Jackson is white.
We discussed that already. I apologize 1,000 times. You want me to get down on my hands and knees? That is not the guy that I was thinking of, by the way, that teamed with...
I think you're thinking of the guy who can dunk. Is my mic on? Okay, I think you're thinking of the guy... You know that guy that could dunk, like his from Oregon, who got like 10 feet above the rim? They had a guy like that. Maybe that's who you're thinking of, who used to fly around and do crazy dunks.
Well, as usual, I have no idea what I was talking about or thinking about. But anyway, that's a good start for some babbling and incoherent talk on PFW in Progress. Tom Casale, Paul Perillo with you for a Tuesday edition of PFW in Progress. Trade deadline coming up, 4 o'clock. I want to throw this out there just because we love to, on PFW in Progress, we don't really hold ourselves to a very high standard. So we'll throw out the most irresponsible rumor that we can come up with. And I got a phone call from a gentleman yesterday who said that he heard that Randy Moss was in Foxborough yesterday. Mm-hmm. Don't know if there was any truth to that. I doubt if there was any truth to that, but we'll throw that out there anyway as we
hit
4 hours. We're 4 hours from the trade deadline.
The message board people might get on you for that, for not naming your source and everything else.
All I can tell you that is the source was somewhat credible. But he wasn't sure of it as well. He was calling to ask me if I had heard anything, and unfortunately I was not here at the time. So I didn't know any more than he did. But anyway, deadline is coming up.
Don't you figure, though, that, I mean, God knows Al Davis doesn't know how to run a football team. But if the Patriots got a first-rounder for Deion Branch, if the Broncos gave up a high second for Javon Walker, they got to be asking for the king's ransom for Randy Moss, don't you think?
Well, the only thing is, you might look at it in a situation where they don't really have much of a choice. They might feel like they need to get rid of him, and other teams might feel they have Oakland over a barrel and say, look, we'll take him off your hands, but that's it. You know, in other words, no one's really going to give you, it's like Manny Ramirez, no one's really going to give you what he's worth.
Right.
Because that's an awful big headache to take on, potential headache to take on. So if I can get him for my price, then maybe I'm interested in the reclamation project. But if not, I'm not going to give you two number ones and then pay him $9 million in salary or whatever the prorated portion of that salary would be. You know what I'm saying? I just think that might be the reason why you might be able to get this guy a little bit cheaper than – he's certainly worth more than Deion Branch or with Javon Walker. I totally agree with your premise.
But, I mean, I just have no idea what direction the Raiders are trying to go. And, I mean, they trade Doug Gabriel, who supposedly was going to start on opening day, and then they bench Jerry Porter, and now he's been suspended. They want to trade Randy Moss. Where are they going here? I have no clue. I have no idea where they're going.
I'm
going
to call myself guilty of this, too. And when they made the decision late in the offseason, because evidently everybody else had just turned him down and they couldn't get anybody to take the job as head coach, I thought that hiring Art Schell back wasn't a bad idea.
Right.
For the Raiders and for Al Davis. I thought he was a guy that would at least command a little bit of respect in the locker room as not only a highly successful former player, but also an African-American player. And I thought that that would help, you know, obviously I'm not trying to break any racial ground here, but obviously the majority of players are African-American. He's a disciplined guy. He's a well-respected guy. And I thought that that might work in terms of helping the culture there. I didn't think they would turn it around or anything and be a great team because they still don't have a lot of talent. But I thought the culture of the stuff that we've seen in the first month and a half would dissipate, and it hasn't. If anything, it's grown. And they can't take the discipline that Shell's trying to institute. But also, I'm guilty of this as well. The more time went by, Tom, the better I thought that Schell did the first time around with the Raiders. And now as I'm kind of reading some stories and remembering a little bit better and some details are coming back, you realize, yeah, they did some winning, but they had some very, very good teams that probably didn't win as much as they should have.
They got to that one AFC championship game where Buffalo
got edged
51-3. I just thought my reasoning behind it was in the position where they were at, where no one would take the job and it was getting late. For that, I thought Art Schell was a pretty good hire.
I really did, and I thought that that would help. But evidently, we was wrong.
Well, and there's got to be a reason why a lot of people are turning that job down, and I think we've seen it.
Now, a couple of interesting items of note so far today. You and Andy were just talking about this upstairs. Jim Fossil evidently resigned this afternoon from his post with the Ravens. He was the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
An assistant head coach, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. So Tom is kind of connecting the dots here, putting two to two together, and it all comes full circle here back to the Raiders. Well, I wonder if maybe there was a situation going on with the Raiders where Art Schell is at the end of his rope, or maybe Al Davis just wants Art Schell out, and maybe Fossil's kind of posturing himself to get in that job because, as Tom pointed out off the air, he really hasn't had many nibbles since he left the Giants.
No, being from New York, I thought the funniest thing ever is when they tell you on ESPN what a great coach Jim Fossil is.
Oh, he'll get a job.
Because he made a Super Bowl. 7 seasons, 4 losing, 3 winning. That's the definition of being a, you know.
Mediocre.
Mediocre,
I mean,
coach.
Not a bad coach, but not a great coach by any stretch.
And but one of the places he did interview for was the Oakland job. So I just thought this is a weird time to quit in the middle of the season, so maybe something's going on there that'll happen in the next week or so.
So we'll keep our eye on that, and before we move on, I want to get the email address, webradio@patriots.com. Again, that's webradio@patriots.com, and you can also give us a call at 508-543-7482. And Tom, we already have our first phone call of the show, and I hadn't even given out the information, so that shows you the power that we have now. And
must be a regular.
Around the country. Of course it is. It's John in Palm Bay, Florida.
John,
how you doing?
Hey, in case you want to know where Palm Bay is, if you know where the space shuttle goes off, it's 30 miles south of that.
Well, there you go. That was probably an Indyism. We'll tell Andy. Andy's always interested where in the state.
I don't know where the space shuttle even goes off. So.
And I got a trivia question for you guys just for the fun of it. See if you guys might know the answer. I asked a friend of mine, and I'm the only one that seems to know this answer. What NFL team could do something any year, but this year in particular, that no other team has done in NFL history, and what would that team be, and what would that event be?
Hello? I was thinking a little bit. It's great radio when you're thinking about it, the answer to a trivia question. The Chicago Bears could go 16-0. No one ever did that. I suppose the Indianapolis Colts could do it as well.
Yeah.
No NFL team ever did that.
I'll give you a hint. It's a team the Patriots do play this year.
They play the Bears.
I'll stick with both of my picks.
It's the Indianapolis Colts that could win the Super Bowl as AFC champ and NFC champ.
The Indianapolis Colts could win the Super Bowl, and if they do that, they would be the AFC champ, and they've already done it as the NFC champ.
Yep.
Very interesting. All right. That's the only team. There weren't too many teams that crossed over, right?
Right.
Yeah. That was really interesting. Not.
Well, no one knew I know that. That's pretty obscure, though. No one got that one, huh?
Nope.
I'm a little disappointed in myself. That's the kind of nonsense that I usually eat up, John. I didn't come through for you, though.
That's a good trivia question. You could just ask people that think they know a lot about football because they'll never get it.
All right. Anything else you call in for? Any bye week thoughts, trade deadline talks?
Yeah, I just had a thought of, have you heard about any trade deadlines with anybody? I don't think Patriots will make a deal, but anybody, I think if Moss goes somewhere, he might go to Miami.
Well, that'd be interesting, Miami. I just don't see the real need for him there. Well, I mean, not that he wouldn't be a good player.
Saban likes those type of players, you know, that's had a little bit of problems.
Yeah, he's taken some chances, yeah.
The problem there is that Moss and Culpepper didn't love each other in Minnesota. I don't know how well they're going to get along.
Yeah, but they might want to hook up again because it was a good combo.
Well, Culpepper might feel a little bit differently about him now since his career has gone down the toilet without
him. Or Moss. I mean, neither has...
Well, you know, that's interesting that you say that, because a lot of people say it the other way. I just said it the other way, and that is interesting, because Moss really hasn't been very special since he's left Culpepper either.
Yeah, neither one's done
that. It's funny, it's kind of that expression, you don't know what you got till it's gone. They worked really well together, hooking up deep down the field, and since they haven't had each other, neither player has lived up to their potential.
But in terms of the trade deadline itself, John, we really haven't heard a whole lot. I was trying to get some information just before we went on the air just to gauge any of the Patriots' interest and see potentially if they're going to make a deal here in the next couple hours or if they've already made a deal. Haven't really been able to find anything out. And I would agree with you. I would think that if there's a deal or two made, there'd probably be for, you know, backup types. You know, a guy that we heard his name thrown around, Tom's favorite running back, Chris Brown, who's now buried in Tennessee behind Travis Henry, who's running, lights out the last couple of weeks, and Lendale White. So there's really no room for Chris Brown, the oft-injured running back out of Colorado. Maybe he gets dealt somewhere. It's always like a backup quarterback seems to change.
Yeah, I definitely think Chris Brown can help a team. I just don't think he can be your feature back because he gets nicked up too much. Someone like the Broncos, maybe, who are afraid Tatum Bell can't carry the load for a full season. He'd fit in quite well there with his running style.
So that's a good fit. That would be a good fit for Denver. So, see, they just need to ask us. Ask the GM. We'll ask Tom. And he'll make the deals for everybody. But so far, we really haven't heard a whole lot.
All right, thanks. Hopefully I get to see you guys when I go to the game from Miami and Jacksonville.
You going down to Miami?
Yeah, it's only 3 hours both ways, so.
Okay. Well, you give us an email that week. Give us a shout. We'll see if maybe we can hook up, and, you know, maybe we'll sign a few autographs for you. You never know.
All right. Bye.
All right, John.
Take care.
That's John in Palm Bay, Florida. It is quiet. It's a weird thing. Like, you know, the baseball trading deadline,
it
just gets flooded,
and
this is a whole different thing. So we'll see if this ends up going anywhere, throughout the afternoon. And obviously, check back with Patriots.com. Throughout the day, if there's anything, I'm sure that we'll have an update up there, although I'm sure that Kyle will not have written.
But the thing about football, too, is in baseball, it's kind of teams that are out of it, trading guys. In the NFL, like, you take a guy like Donnie Edwards, who's supposedly on the trading block. Now, why would San Diego...
Well, they're not going to want to trade him.
Would want to make another team better by getting rid of him. It wouldn't make much sense for him. So then I hear a lot of guys in Tampa Bay are on the block. Well, you know, I don't know. Like, why would you trade Booger McFarland so you can go out and draft another defensive tackle?
And plus, why would the NFL, the problem, one of the problems is, and we've talked about the system, and it's harder to get a guy in the middle of the season to contribute right away.
Yeah.
That's a big part of the problem. But another part is the timing. Even Tampa Bay, Tom, is Tampa Bay out of it?
No.
They're not out of it. You can. They only played five games.
Right.
No. Still 11 games left.
They're a Reggie Bush punt return from being 2-0 under Gronkowski. They feel things are turning around there.
Let's just say something silly happens and they go off and rattle off like 9 out of 11 to close out the year. They'd probably make the playoffs at 10-6. Right? That's not unheard of to do that. Now, do I think that's going to happen? No, I'm being realistic. But my point is, it's awfully hard to determine how many teams right now would say they're out of it. I mean, Oakland's out of it. Green Bay's out of it. Tennessee's out of it.
San Francisco's out of it.
Arizona's out of it. But how many teams are really done, finished, closed the book, they're out of it?
Not many.
So I think that they need to, if they want to to do this and have it be a legitimate tool in the NFL, they need to move it back a little bit, at least a halfway point.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, so that way maybe have a little bit better determination of
it's too early,
a bigger pool of talent that might be available anyway. I also wanted to talk about the Monday night game last night between the Cardinals and the Bears. Obviously, not a very impressive performance by Chicago, but, you know, finding a way to win. Rex Grossman, maybe a little foreshadowing of maybe a little unraveling, or is it just one bad game? I mean, 6 turnovers, yeah. 4 picks, and 2 fumbles.
The only thing I wish people would go back and watch every game that the 1985 Bears played so they can see what domination is. I'm so sick of hearing, well, comparing this team to the 85 Bears. That team ripped people apart. They destroyed everything in its way. And I just, when people talk about this Bears team going 16-0, I think it's comical. I mean, does this look like a 16-0 team to you? They were lucky to beat Minnesota. You saw that game, Paul. Remember what happened there? I mean, so yeah, I know you need some lucky things to happen, but let's not go crazy. Great, the Bears and Chargers are great right now, but it matters is who's great in December and January. And the Bears found a way to win last night. I'll give them credit for that. It just, like you said, with that, Rex Grossman is still a very young quarterback. We have to remember that. And I don't think that they're a 16-0 team. I think they could win 12, 13 games, sure.
No, they're not going to go 16-0.
But the media is, we're 5 games into the season. Let's wait till like last year when the Colts had a shot at it. Right. They looked at San Diego as probably being the last team in their way.
Right.
Now we got a chance. But 5 games into the season, let's calm down on the 16-0.
Yeah, and I also look at, I think one thing worth looking at with Grossman is, you know, he's been around a couple of years now, but he hasn't played.
Right.
So this is going to be interesting to see how he handles, say, week 10, week 11, week 12, because he's never really gone through it. You know, the wear, it's almost like he's going to hit a rookie wall.
Right. And
because
how he
hasn't played
back from a performance like this.
Yeah. Now, I liked what he said last night in terms of, you know, not, you know, pulling any punches about his own performance. He was awful, and he said so.
Uh-huh.
He said, look, you know, I put us in a position to lose the game, and you know, our defense was just unbelievable. I mean, he almost sounded like a fan, you know, just talking about how good the defense was and how they won the game. He goes, we'll have all week to talk about how bad I was, but, you know, that defense, you know, really deserves mentioning.
Touchdowns.
That's amazing. It's
special
amazing.
Teams and defense.
First team ever to come back from 20 points down without scoring an offensive touchdown. You know, that's the kind of stats that, you know, someone who has way too much time on their hands researches, but, I mean, it's amazing. I watched the first half, or a good portion of the first half, and didn't think it was necessary to watch the second half. I didn't really, I mean, you know, there's times where you think, and I did agree with Charles Barkley, who was in the booth at the end of the half, and Theismann, they were saying, you know, Arizona might regret these couple of trips here where they had the short fields and had to settle for field goals, and I agreed. I didn't think they would cost them the game, however, and certainly not in the manner.
There's not much you could do to what happened to the Cardinals last night. I mean, and unfortunately, I think 99% of us knew that field goal had no chance of going in. I mean, I know it was Neil Rackers, but when he lined up, you just knew it wasn't meant to be that night. You could just see it.
It's funny, too, you know, the Dennis Green, your favorite coach, really, he took the loss hard, and he had an outburst at the end of the game. He was asked something about if he was prepared for the Bears and if he knew how good Chicago was, and he just went off. And he said, yes, you know, of course we knew how good they were. You know, we were out there and for 3 quarters, and we played them in the preseason, and it was the 3rd preseason game, and we played 3 quarters against them, and the starters played 3 quarters, and we knew exactly what they were. We gave away the game, at the end of the game, and if you guys just want to crown them champs now, you know, crown them now, or, you know, talking about Chicago, he was banging on the podium. He was yelling. He was as upset as I've seen a coach really since Jim Mora.
Yeah, and the look he had on his face on the sideline is probably the maddest I've ever seen a coach, like, physically look. He absolutely wanted to murder somebody. He was so mad. And Denny Green, I've seen him upset before, but he's kind of a happy-go-lucky guy. I've never seen him anyone. That, I mean, just the look on his face when that field goal didn't go in, just knowing that his team blew. The thing is, it's one thing if, say, like this happened to the Steelers, but for the Cardinals, they need a win like this for their franchise. I mean, I think Denny Green knows how important a Monday night football game in Arizona with the house packed. This was a big game for them. Matt Leinart starting at quarterback, and for them to blow it like the Cardinals team usually would has to hurt.
Yeah, Leinart looks pretty good, though. I would say
he looked very.
His first two starts have been, you know, very positive for Arizona. I heard a lot of talk on ESPN this morning, ESPN Radio, that you know, Dennis Green probably going to get fired at the end of this year. Now, you know, clearly they're not going to the playoffs. They're 1-4 or something, 1-5. I don't know, one win anyway. I look at that as, if you think he's a good coach, if you think he can coach, why are you going to fire him? Because they haven't. I mean, let's face it, they have some talent, but they're still not real good.
This is the way I look at it.
Still need an offensive line.
The team is much more talented now than when Denny Green took it over, okay? You got a rookie quarterback who's starting. Give the guy one more year. If they improve next year, you know he's on the right track. If they just win 5 or 6 games next year, you know it's time for a change. But I think he definitely, from his previous track record, at least deserves one more year with Matt Leinart as his quarterback.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this statistic, and I don't have the exact numbers, but I'm going to put them in the ballpark. One of the most amazing defensive performances you'll see. Edgerrin James.
Actually, I'm not even mad.
36 carries for 55 yards. That's unbelievable to me. That's absolutely unbelievable. That you could be worn down and demoralized to the point where the Bears' defense was on the field for the entire game and yet never let this guy get loose. Not one. 36 carries for 55 yards. It's the worst per-carry average for that amount of carries in the history
of
NFL. Football. That is, to me, I don't even speak Spanish, Gary, but that to me
is... Actually, I'm not even mad. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not good at math. I can't even figure that out.
Well, it's less than 2 a carry, I can tell you that. Anyway, let's hit the emails here for a little bit, and we'll start off in Anaheim, California. It's from JC's Better Half. I don't know exactly what that is. Asante Samuel is gone, and we need a young Mike Vrabel to be able to pressure the quarterback with a combination of speed and power. Colvin hasn't got the power, according to JC. JC's Better Half. And Graham is also gone. So, to us, our needs are, one, a tall, fast cover corner. Two, outside linebacker. Vrabel can move back inside. I don't think you'd want to do that. But three, a young middle linebacker that can apprentice behind Bruschi and Vrabel and be the heir apparent. And four, a blocking tight end. Our two big questions are, would you go for a corner or a safety and move Wilson back to his original corner spot? And do you believe that with, say, one of our extra 6th and 7th picks, we could pry Oliver Hoyt away from the Cowboys? There you go, Tom. You're Oliver Hoyt. My husband and I have both perused the 2007 mock drafts and are completely confused. The young cornerback from Fresno State is in the top 10 first round on one page and at the bottom of the second round on another. Anxious to hear your thoughts. Well, I'm going to give that one to you, Tom, because you're the draft expert.
Well, and the problem is that you'll see discrepancies in mock drafts a week before the draft. If you're looking at them now, you're not going to find anything close. I mean, these prospects haven't been evaluated. Yeah, I mean, they're being evaluated by scouts. Don't get me wrong. I'm just talking about at the combine and all that stuff. It's just, you know what you do? You look, watch football and say, hey, Calvin Johnson, he's good. He's going to get drafted high. That's what you do right now. There's no sense of looking at mock drafts. It's way too early. We don't know who's coming out yet. It's just, there's just so much that goes into this process. As far as who the Patriots will draft, I mean, I don't know. I can't say it any more than what Bill Belichick says. They don't draft for need. They draft the highest guys on their board. I know that they need linebackers, but you know what? We sat here for how many months, Paul? 3? And talked about how they needed linebackers. They drafted one, and he didn't even make the team.
Right. And they're going to look at it, and they're going to watch. They're not going to just take a guy to fill a position unless he is, you know, highly rated in their minds. Now, the only time they're going to alleviate from that system, and Bill talked about it a little bit briefly a couple of weeks ago in talking about the Dolphins and how Nick Saban does the same thing. if they have four guys ranked, say, between 10 and 15 on their draft board, and they're picking between 10 and, you know, that's where they're picking. So they have four guys rated about the same in that group, and one's a quarterback.
Right.
They're going to eliminate the quarterback because they have Tom Brady, much like the Dolphins in the example that Bill used would eliminate a running back because they just took Ronnie Brown with the second overall pick 1 year ago. That's the only way they're going to deviate from that. And to be honest with you, most teams use that approach. More often than not, the team will pick the best player available, not necessarily the best position available, and the best player at a position. Now, there are exceptions to every rule, but I think Tom's right. I think Bill is going to stick with that philosophy more or less. So it's very hard to tell. I do think, and we've talked about this a lot, I do think they probably would have liked to have taken one of those linebackers in the first round this year.
Yeah.
However, they didn't get an opportunity to do so at the spot where they felt the value was there.
And this was kind of a down year for linebackers, not counting the pass rushing end type linebacker. This coming year, it's going to be very deep at linebacker, so there's a good chance that someone will be there when they pick.
Okay, Nick is next up, and he says, I know the chances of the Week 6 trade are slim and none, but I was thinking about rumored people said to be on the block, and I started wondering, if the Pats traded for some help, what position would you like to see them trade for? Me personally, I would love to see a top-tier cornerback be brought in. Brian Glazer said the Tampa Bay Bucks were having a fire sale. Is that Brian Glazer? No, I think it's
Jay Glazer.
I would take Rondé Barber or Brian Kelly. I also heard that Buffalo was shopping some guys, and I started drooling about Nate Clements being brought in. I asked this before, and you guys skipped over it, but let's try again in the bye week when you have nothing better to talk about. Why is Larry Izzo in the game in goal line situations? I saw a clip of the Miami game, and there he was when Ronnie Brown got into the end zone. Well, let's take the first part first. I don't think you're going to get that caliber of player on the trade deadline.
If the Bills traded Nate Clements to the Patriots, I think the other teams in the league would actually file a grievance. That would be so stupid.
Yeah, and the other thing is, when you see quality players dealt at this time of year, or any time of year for that matter, it's almost always with an asterisk behind the guy. Like Randy Moss, Jerry Porter, these guys that have questionable character issues, Corey Dillon, but when the Patriots acquired him, you don't see guys like Rondé Barber, who are a model citizen with Tampa Bay, and all of a sudden they decide, well, I'm just going to trade him in the middle of the year. Now, I'm not saying it's never going to happen, but I'm just saying that the chances are pretty slim.
Yeah, and I don't see Nate Clement being traded. I just can't see that. If you're the Bills and you're building, why don't you build around good players? How can you become better if you get rid of all your good players? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Right, and I tease Fred a lot because we go back and forth about the Buffalo defense.
It sucks.
He thinks it's great, and I think it's marginal at best. I will say this. I think Buffalo has some quality individual players on defense, and Nate Clements is one of those guys. I don't see why you would want to trade Nate Clements. I certainly would take him and plug him in as one of my top cornerbacks right now. Probably the top cornerback.
Oh, yeah.
But I just think it's unrealistic, and for all the reasons Tom mentioned, on top of even if they weren't in the same division and weren't rebuilding and all of that stuff. So I just think that's, you're chasing fool's gold there, you're going to get a guy like that.
I think now, because the baseball trade deadline is, I think people are trying to make the NFL trade deadline as exciting,
and people
and
look
just
at
isn't.
It, and people look at it and say, well, the Yankees got Bobby Abreu. He's great, he's a great player. Well, yeah, and again, there's extenuating circumstances. There's, the guy didn't want to be in Philadelphia, was going to be leaving anyway shortly because he's been trying to fire his way out of town for a long time. There's always an asterisk next to a guy that's available of that caliber.
Yeah.
The Larry Izzo on the goal line defense part, I really can't give you a specific answer other than to say, the players are part of the units, and he's just like any other. He's been a part of the goal line defense for 2 years now. He made a great play in the goal line, in the end zone on Tony Gonzalez last year in Kansas City to knock down a third down pass and set up a field goal. He looked terrible in the playoffs against Denver in a situation where
Willie McGinnis let him know.
And I was going to say the play that McGinnis got in a fight with him, because that's what Willie McGinnis does, is he bullies guys. But anyway, he's on the goal line defense. I think that the linebackers, basically those guys, replace the defensive backs. So you don't put 11 big, huge guys out there. You have to have someone who, just in case they throw,
can drop
and maybe chase somebody. Your defensive backs are coming out. So your smaller linebackers are going to serve as the defensive backs, and that's Larry Izzo and Don Davis. You know, that's when they're out there. And, you know, while Izzo is a lot smaller than Davis, you know, you need someone out there that maybe can run around a little bit. I don't, you know, would it be my choice? No, he wouldn't be my choice. But he's on the unit. I really don't know how to explain why he's on the unit other than to say he has
I'm
been.
I'm sure they've tried
other
players in practices and preseason and everything else, and apparently that's what Bill feels most comfortable with.
He asked a question about Patrick Cobbs. He's in Miami now, right?
Last I knew, yeah.
Yeah, so he is on Miami's practice squad?
I think so.
Yeah, so he was wondering why the Patriots don't re-sign him to the practice squad. He said, Gorin looked pretty good as the Cardinals marched down the field against Chicago. Was it bad play calling or bad recognition that led to Rex to throw deep 8 plays in a row? Does this make you think the Bears are ours for the taking? I think Troy will have a field day against the cover 2 that Bolden found so many holes in. What do you think?
Well, I think if you're comparing Troy Brown to Anquan Bolden, this conversation is over.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. And I do think that Rex Grossman will have a hard time against the Patriots' defense, however.
And I think New England's going to have a hard time against the Bears' defense.
I do. I think that's got all the makings of a 10-9 special.
Yeah,
the team that turns the ball over the fewest times wins.
That's good. If you like one of those old-school slobber knockers.
And just so you know, I don't.
Those of you who do are going to love that game. I think Paul's right. I think that the team who makes the mistake, and when you're going Brady and Grossman, you know,
that's
the
why
Patriots
have and the game being here, yeah. I would say, also gives the advantage to the Patriots. But good stuff there, Nick. A lot of stuff in there, as usual. Raman is next up in Turlock, California. I listened to every podcast last week and heard a couple different times about how much Doug Gabriel struggles to get off the line when a defensive back is in press coverage. I also heard that Chad Jackson abuses people coming off the line from somebody on the show. I was thinking, with Gabriel's size, wouldn't he have an advantage against smaller DBs by just pushing them off? What do you guys think the main reasons are for Gabriel struggling and Jackson abusing DBs off the line? I just think it's part of talent.
Talent, yeah. And we have, you know, we've only seen Gabriel in a couple of games. It's not like we broke him down like every game he's ever played. We've seen him in a couple of games. He had a lot of trouble in the Jets game getting off the line, and a lot of trouble in the Miami game getting off the line. So we're basing it on 2 out of the 3 games he played. Now, the other game he played, they weren't pressing him. They were playing back in a prevent defense. I think if you look at Gabriel and Chad Jackson and just go on physical ability, Chad Jackson has a lot more physical ability. That's why he's getting off the line easier.
Now, I agree with everything Tom just said, and we don't have enough information yet. But you know what I kind of look at it as? Gabriel has this guy that comes over, and everybody's like, wow, they got this guy for a 5th-round pick? He's way better than that. Wow, what are we missing? He can do this. He's a big guy. He's fast. He can catch the ball. He's been fairly productive.
On the part we're missing.
I look like him. You know what he's like? Serrano with a curveball.
Right.
A couple of teams press coverage. Oh, that's why we only got a 5th-round pick for him. That's why we only had to give up a 5th-round pick. Now, it's way too early to say that, but that's my initial reaction. Based on a month of play, he has ability, no doubt, and I'm intrigued by his ability. But I need to see him do it more often and more consistently and get open against all different types of coverages. We happen to notice a few plays in the games that Tom mentioned where he struggled with that. So something to keep an eye on down the line.
And, but, you know, now, him and Jackson started last game. So when you're Doug Gabriel and you're starting with a rookie, that means you're drawing Nate Clements. So against Buffalo, if he starts, boom, you got one of the better cornerbacks going up against you. So those are the type of guys he's going to have to beat, because if you're the Patriots' number one, they may not have a number one receiver, but Champ Bailey does, Nate Clements does. You know, those are the guys that cover those receivers. So it's going to be hard for him if he struggles against average defensive backs to get open against the better ones.
Yeah, and like I said, it's definitely worth keeping an eye on this guy. See if you see what we saw in the Meadowlands, you know, for lack of a better term. See, you know, when you're watching, and it's hard to do it on TV, so it'll be hard to do this week in Buffalo, but the next game, next home game, try to watch him when he lines up, and it's hard to just not watch the football on plays, but you try to just watch the guy get off the line, see if you think he's getting open or how he's doing, you know, trying to beat that press coverage and make your own determinations. But I'm just watching highlights again of the Monday night game. It's really just unbelievable. Edgerrin James fumbles twice.
You just feel for, I mean, God.
Oh, that was a bad kick, too, huh?
Yeah, you just knew it wasn't going
you
in.
You could see it was kind of spinning sideways. He might be a little bit of a choker, huh?
Yeah.
You know, Rackers?
This one, I mean, I know it was a long one last week, but that's 0 for 2.
Already,
but they are who we thought they were.
He already missed more than he missed last year.
Yeah.
And obviously he didn't have too many important ones last year.
Well, and you got to give it to Fred's boy. Well, that guy doesn't miss a kick.
Robbie Gould?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's kicked well for them. He's kicked well for them. Let's get Bob's email in here. He's writing about perspective, Tom. He says, the jaded Patriots fans who feel like booing or vilifying Tom Brady, get a life. First, think about Rex Grossman's performance on Monday Night Football, a 10.7 passer rating and responsible for 6 turnovers for perspective. Second, look at Tom's current stats in the AFC as of week 6. A, tied for first in passing TDs. B, total offense yards per game, third. C, time of possession, third. Sacks allowed, tied for first. And in red zone efficiency, third, 58%. And in his last 2 games, his passer rating has been around 90. Third, the Patriots are 4-1, which is tied for the second best record in the AFC. And finally, including the Buffalo and the Minnesota games, Brady would have led his team to at least 56 games straight without losing back-to-back games. Positive history does not always operate on a steep upward curve, but if it keeps going up consistently, what do fans really have to complain about? That's Bob and Regina.
Well, not much, but the only thing I'll say is if you think Brady had a good game against the Dolphins, you didn't watch a game.
Right.
I don't care. I don't care what his passer rating is. He didn't have a good game. He got balls batted down at the line. He missed some receivers. That was not a good game for Tom Brady. The one thing I'll say for him is that he's not losing games for his team. He's not throwing interceptions. He's not, you know, a couple of games last year like the Chiefs game when he didn't have a running game. He was trying to force too many things in there.
Right.
This year he's not doing that, and that's what makes him Tom Brady.
And you know the other thing, too, and I knew this would happen when I was watching the game last night. I knew we would get comments about the Bears and how they're not good because they looked bad against a bad team. And I knew that people would
dominate every week.
But I knew people would overreact, and I knew people would completely write off Rex Grossman because of his miserable performance. You know, look, that was probably worse than anything that most other guys are going to do, but... You know, I saw Tom Brady on a Monday night game completely unravel against Miami and cost his team a game. Now, granted, that's the only time I've ever seen that happen, but it's the only time I've ever seen it happen to Rex Grossman, too. You know, let's just relax and just kind of assess what we see and not have to make a blanket judgment on the entire season,
the entire career.
Tom Brady is the best. We all know that. We don't need to keep saying it. But the Bears are pretty good.
Yeah.
You know? The Bears are still pretty good.
The only reason I took Arizona getting the number was because I just figured that the Bears were kind of due for... They've been blowing everybody out. I'm playing the odds.
I agree with you. And, yeah, I'm ready, Tom. It's about a month now. What's today? The 16th? 17th?
Yeah.
We're a little more than a month away from that Bears game. I'm already prepared for... Chicago hasn't played anybody. Everybody, you get that. That'll be our email of the week. Every single guy will write in. Craig in South Carolina will call in, and he'll tell us about how Chicago hasn't played anybody. Yeah, I know. That's true. Neither are the Patriots, but that's okay.
And to bring up that point, Paul, I was sitting there on Sunday watching
a bag of chips.
Watching my buddy Mike Carey blow another game as being the worst official on the planet. But as I was watching Tampa Bay win that game, I was thinking, boy... Wouldn't that be funny if Cincinnati went 8-8 and maybe they weren't as good as we originally thought and have the Patriots beaten anybody? Then I thought to myself, who's good? There's really no – I mean, when you think about it, I was trying to think of the good teams. Nobody plays anybody, really.
That's why I feel
nobody
the Patriots
plays
are
anybody.
One of the elite teams because I just don't think there really are any.
No, and they –
They're as good as anybody.
And you hate to keep saying the same old thing, but – when you have a bunch of teams like that and you have a good quarterback in Brady and a good coach in Belichick who has good game plans, that's why they're winning these close games. It's hard to keep writing an email saying these teams didn't play anybody. We hear that about the Colts. They don't play anybody. The Patriots don't play anybody. They have like 3 or 4 tough games all year. That's it. Nobody's any good in the NFL. All the teams stink.
All right, and we're going to get the second hour, by the way. I want to talk a little bit more about the league in general and some of the games that we got to see, because it was the bye week, and we actually got to get a good look at a lot of the games. But I wanted to bring up that, and that's one, obviously, that was a hot-button topic for me, was that Cincinnati game. Let's move on here. Another email. PJ is next up. PJ was wondering what we thought about that strange Bears game last night. We're talking about that a little bit. As impressive as a win like that is, it kind of sent up a red flag for me because Rex Grossman looked terrible against what, Tom? A subpar defense.
Yep.
I'm not saying that they're going to make the playoffs or anything like that, but everyone is touting... I'm not saying they aren't, I'm sorry, aren't going to make the playoffs, but everyone is touting them as a sure Super Bowl pick right now, and I think I have to see a little bit better play from their offense. Change it to the Pats, I have one of those feelings that the Patriots are going to come out and beat up on the Bills this week. What do you guys think? Remember, this is the second time we are seeing them this year, and BB's record is amazing, amazing, the second time around against teams. Keep up the great work. Fred, you are part of the A-team, maybe an A-minus, but you are still in the ballpark.
So, now, the Bears didn't look good last night, right?
They did not.
Now, did you think that the Patriots looked good the first time they played the Bills?
Well, this is like what I'm talking about. I don't think the Patriots have looked good in victory at all this year, with the exception
except
of Cincinnati.
Cincinnati.
I think the Patriots played...
But they're 4-1.
I thought they played a pedestrian game against Buffalo and a pedestrian game against Miami. They were a little bit better against the Jets and probably deserved to win that game easier than they did.
A couple of things happened there that changed it.
They played exceptionally well against Cincinnati.
Right.
Exceptionally well.
So it's hard to take one team and say, well, they didn't look that good. The Patriots get 203 total yards against the Dolphins.
By the way, the fewest amount of total yards they've had in victory in a game one time in the last 2+ years. They've had. Matter of fact, the last time was a home win against Miami in 2004. Last time they were held to less yards, I think it was 213 they had. Against Miami the other day.
Yeah, 213 it was.
They had 204 in 2004 here against Miami, the last time they were held that low. That's a lot of games in between.
Yeah.
So let's not just say, you know, everybody, you know, I need to see more from that. You know, if you're a Chicago fan and you happen to tune in that Miami game for the first time you've seen the Patriots, you're probably sitting there saying, I need to see more from that Tom Brady-led offense before I'm going to anoint them a Super Bowl pick. Well, we think that's silly because we know what Tom Brady can do. And rightly so. We've seen it. We know the Patriots are going to have better offensive days. Look at the last 3 or 4 games for Chicago. They've had great offensive days.
Right.
And they put 40 up on Buffalo.
I don't know about you, Paul, but I'm not big on these power rankings.
I hate
week.
Them.
Like,
I think that's for college.
Back in the day, like when you had that Cowboys team that had all that talent, and they started 0-2 the year without Emmitt Smith, you knew once they got Emmitt Smith back, they were gonna lay a whooping on people. But in today's NFL, with all the mediocrity, I think it's like you said earlier, teams get hot around week 10, 11, that point of the season. And we don't know which teams that's gonna be yet. It might be the Patriots, it may not. It could be another team that's like sitting there at 3-2 right now that we're not really talking about. And I think it's, right now, you're just trying to win games. That's why I think it's good the Patriots haven't played well. They're 4-1. But at some point during the season, a couple teams are going to get hot. And I think it's too hard to predict right now. I mean, the Chargers, who knows? Maybe they don't even make the playoffs.
I'll give you an example, Tom. Last year, okay, we were into late November, and the Pittsburgh Steelers were a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they were an absolute mess.
They were probably a loss away from losing the whole season, like just falling apart.
And they never lost again.
Right.
Okay. They won the rest of their games just to make the playoffs, and then they stormed through the playoffs and won the Super Bowl. Nobody was playing any better at the end of last year than the Kansas City Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
They were playing great football. They didn't make the playoffs. They fell short.
Right.
You know, these things happen. They stumbled along. If you had to play, you know, Kansas City last year in September, maybe you eked out a win. But when the Patriots got them, in November, they were playing pretty well down there, and that game wasn't even competitive.
Right.
The Chiefs crushed us. So, you know, you look back and you say, well, they lost to this team. They were 9-7. They weren't even a playoff team. Well, that was a pretty good team.
Yeah.
When they played them, you know, it doesn't look like they're going to be that good this year, but. These are the things that happen.
Yeah.
You know?
So instead of like focusing on power rankings, my advice would be, in a couple of weeks, start to try to find those teams that look like they're getting on a roll a little bit. Those are the teams you got to worry about, not the teams that are ranked one in the power rankings in week
four.
You got to
kind of look at some matchups, too. I think power rankings are great in college when the teams don't always play each other. And you need something to compare them to. You know, in the NFL, it's a lot closer. You have a better chance to play the same teams. At least you have, you know, if you don't play the exact team, you've probably played two or three teams similar than that team. So you have something to gauge it by, but, you know, it's not really the smartest way to go. But Tom's buddy is checking in, James, in Dyer, Indiana. He says, it's James the iPod guy. Great weekend of picks, Tom. I almost went 100%. By the time you read this, you should already have your iPod.
And I do. Thank you, James.
It was delivered this morning and signed for by someone named C. Landry. That's Charlie. She did sign for that, and Tom got it. No problem. If you didn't get it already, keep those picks coming for me. He wants, he wants more picks. One question. What are you guys hearing about trades today? Had no idea. So, but... James?
Tom, can you use the word documented more often?
The what?
I almost went 100% documented.
Oh. James, I'm sorry that Maurice Morris is a bum and had to fumble the ball there, or we would have had a clean sweep on the picks, but you are a man of your word. James is actually a season ticket holder for the Patriots. He sent me a note with the iPod, and he's coming to the Bears game, and we figure that's a game that's probably going to get changed time-wise, so we'll see if we can try to hook up. But I'm getting a little nervous. I think you actually want to kill me.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is all you're trying to make me feel comfortable, because I got to be honest with you. I didn't think there was no way in heck you were sending me that iPod, and when I got back today and it was sitting on my desk, I couldn't believe it. But thank you very much. You're a man of your word, and just know that I retired from gambling for a reason. Those type of weeks won't happen all the time, so when you see me going cold, start fading, baby.
James, also, I got to tell you, you know, we got back in the office. That package was on Tom's chair today. Because we were out this morning, we were over at New England Cable News filming our wonderful TV show, which, by the way, you can catch here in the New England area.
They're very exciting to watch.
On New England Cable News, Patriots Football Weekly, on Tuesday nights at 11 p.m. If you don't catch that first one, Tom, what do? Just watch the rerun at 11:30.
Oh, yeah, they have
replays
right
at 11:30.
You can hear Fred Kirsch with all his insightful.
You can see the Fred Kirsch show once again today. By the way, Fred, a dominating conversation, as he is wont to do. And when it's on TV, that Tom, Andy, and myself feel bad of correcting him. We just let him go off and whatever. But that's where we were this morning. We got back, and the iPod is sitting on Tom's chair, and we kind of had a lot of nervous laughter. Amongst the three of us, because I have to admit, I agree with Tom, James. I don't think any of us thought that there was any chance that he was going to get an iPod out of giving you a prediction.
Yeah, I was just hoping to get you out of the hole.
Yeah, so it was hopefully. By the way, do you work for Apple?
Yeah, I was going to say, James does work for Apple, so... my guess is that's one of the ones that fell off the truck. But either way,
it's okay. Truck, it's going to fall into Tom's fiance's Christmas stocking.
Yeah,
anyway.
I should tell you, if you want to know how long it's going to take me to learn how to use that iPod, it took me 20 minutes to open the box.
What kind is it, Tom?
It's the white video iPod.
You'll be happy with that.
That's the one I got for Beth for Mother's Day.
I have it, too.
So Fred Kirsch will be fielding a lot of questions from me over the next couple of weeks. But, James, thanks. You are indeed a man of your word, and I'll do what I can during that Bears game, the week of the Bears game, to try to set something up so we can hook up together.
So you can have Andy give you a tour.
We'll have Andy give you a tour.
All right. We'll take one more email before we hit a break here. Sean is in Hazleton, Pennsylvania. Sean Mack. I know Fred is talking with Ken Flanders about that he better start making the number 88 Moss jersey in the pro shop.
To Ken Flanders at Gillette Stadium.
But time for a reality check. I know he is a great player and will look good in the Patriots jersey, but it's not going to happen. It's a nice conversation piece for a Tuesday afternoon, but we have a better chance of Terry Glenn coming back to the Patriots than Randy Moss coming by 4 p.m. today. I will be shocked if a deal for anyone is done today. Also, the field looks awful. With that being said, please, no field turf. Football is made for me is two things. Games at 1 o'clock and played on a grass field. Screw the field turf. I couldn't disagree more.
And unfortunately, there's very few games being played at 1 o'clock these days, and everyone's going to field turf.
Right, and we probably, before we, Gary, before we go to that break, we should probably talk about that. There was a report on Nesson. This is not one of my unsubstantiated rumors. There was a report on Nesson here locally over the weekend that
and Paul
stated,
does not appear on Nesson.
That's true. That stated that the Patriots have plans to put in a field turf surface prior to the November 26th meeting with the Chicago Bears, which I think would mean two things. One, they're clearly serious about fixing the field because it's a mess, and they haven't been able to do anything about it over the past 4 or 5 years. But two, and I think more importantly, right after the Colts game.
Yeah. That's the only reason why I think the report is true, is right. Because of the timing of it.
Right. And from talking to the Patriots people, talked to Stacey James a little bit about this. He did not confirm that report, didn't deny it necessarily, but he just said that the Patriots have talked to several turf companies, whether they be natural sod or the synthetic surfaces, and they're weighing their options and didn't really have any more to add other than that. But just wanted to throw that out there, that Nesson report. Want to give them props for that, because we'll see what...
And we should add that if the downside of the field turf would be they couldn't host any international soccer games. Is that correct?
You found that out for sure?
No, I found it out from Andy Hart.
Oh, yeah. See, I'm not positive on that.
Okay.
The MLS can play on the field turf, but I don't think that international soccer... I don't think that they play that on field turf. So that might be a reason why the Crafts don't want to do that, because they do host periodic international games. And obviously there was a lot of World Cup events here in Foxborough back in the mid-90s, I want to say 94-ish maybe. So that might be a reason why they don't want to do it. So keep the emails coming in, webradio@patriots.com. Tom and I are going to take a quick little trip around the league, maybe in the second half, talk about what we saw on Sunday and Monday. So keep the emails coming in. Webradio@patriots.com. We'll be right back.
Lion-sized hunger and want the awesome authentic taste of Gillette Stadium in your tailgate or right at home. Tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sack Attack Sausage, First Down Franks, or Patriots Brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sack Attack Sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, First Down Franks, and more. With Patriots Gridiron Grillers, you don't have to wait for the game for that great stadium taste. Gridiron Grillers are available at Agar and CMS Wholesalers, Big Y, DeMuda's Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Rich Brothers Sudbury Farms, Shaw's Stop and Shop, and at your local supermarket. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
It's here at your local Ford store. Comprehensive coverage on every vehicle we sell. That's right, Ford stands behind every 2006 model with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. Every Mustang, every 500, every Freestyle, every Explorer, even every F-Series truck. Every new 2006 Ford vehicle comes with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. That's security. Plus, right now you can get 0% financing on select Fords. 560 coverage, 0% financing. At Ford, we're with you every step of the way. See your local Ford store or call 1-877-4410. Ford, bold moves.
Come on, baby, let's go.
The New England Patriots won an amazing 3 Super Bowl championships in 4 years. Relive these defining moments in Patriots history with a limited edition print featuring action photos and images of the 3 championship banners that now hang at Gillette Stadium. And if you think that's good...
How about having it signed by perennial Pro Bowler Richard Seymour?
It's going to be set. Richard Seymour.
This autographed print exclusively from New England Patriots is perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on the Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points card and free three championship banner print signed by Richard Seymour. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autograph print limited to the first 300 with qualifying purchase. Visit PatriotsExtraPoints.com for details. This is PFW in progress.
Buck melanoma. Molly Russell's wart. Not her wart. I'm the wart. She's my tumor. My growth. My pimple. I'm Uncle Wart. Just old Buck Wart Russell. That's what they call me. Or melanoma head. They'll call me that.
PFW in progress.
Don't give me any crap, Maisie.
I'm telling you, you said crap.
There's nothing wrong with crap.
Oh, really? I thought that was a swear.
No, you're thinking of sh**.
With Fred Kirsch.
Forget that we were perfectly happy. So thank them for getting treated like sh** every day.
I'm telling on that one.
Paul Perillo.
What did you have, a few drinks this morning? Huh? I think you did, didn't you? In the field of local live home entertainment. Oh, my God!
You low-life, lying, four-flushing sack of shit.
And Andy. And Andy.
Where are you living?
In the city.
Do you have a house?
Apartment.
On the ranch?
Rent.
What do you do for a living?
Lots of things.
Where's your office?
I don't have one.
How come?
I don't need one.
Do you have kids?
No, I don't.
How come?
It's an even longer story. What's your record for consecutive questions asked?
38.
Andy Hart.
You have much more hair than you notice than my dad.
How nice of you to notice.
I'm a kid. That's my job.
Some guy named Tom.
Your girlfriend?
Friend? And yes, she is a girl.
Are you supposed to marry her or something?
The subject has come up, yes, but nothing serious.
Maybe if you got married, you'd stop being such an ass.
And you never know, Rory might stop by.
Look, I'm just calling to say I miss you. No, I haven't been drinking. I've been thinking a lot about you. I think about those two little dimples on your buns. What do we call them? One was on the right was Lyndon, and the left was Johnson, I think. No, that was your boobs we did. Oh, your boobs were Minnie and Mickey. I remember that because of Disney World. And Felix. Felix is what we called you.
PFW in progress.
Take this quarter. Go downtown and have a rat gnaw that thing off your face.
Back here for the second hour of PFW in progress. Tom Casale and Paul Perillo here at Gillette Stadium. Trade deadline now. 3 hours away, Tom. I have not heard anything more than the nonsense that we sprouted during the first hour.
And I'm sure if something happens,
we will be the last to know. You guys will probably email in. Yeah. You guys will probably email in with information before we'll be able to get it here in the bowels of Gillette Stadium. But I do want to talk a little bit about the games over the past weekend and, you know, kind of talk about what we saw from the other teams. The other games, some really competitive games, some great finishes. Good week to be winless because you were 3 out of 4 of the winless teams got off the schneid. And, of course, the Raiders being the only one that didn't, and for obvious reasons, that makes a lot of sense.
And I'll tell you what, their best chance is this week because they get that Arizona team coming off this brutal, brutal loss. This is it. It's in Oakland. That's their best shot, in my opinion.
I think it's almost as hard to go 0-16 as it is to go 16-0.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, just the odds of losing every game, that's tough. I want to hit a couple of emails here because some people were writing about some of the things that we were talking about. So I wanted to get to that a little bit. Let's see here. On Jim Fossil, and I do want to state a correction because we saw an updated scroll on ESPN. It's now saying that the report is that Fossil was fired by Baltimore.
And being from New York, that makes much more sense.
But so that probably puts a little bit of a kibosh on our conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
But anyway, Mac in Somerville was with us. He says, just pondering the Fossil resignation and thinking of the timing of it and such, could it be he's just getting his resume together for a high-profile college job like Michigan State or maybe the University of Miami? Or it could be for the Raiders, like you said, well, what about the Cardinals? Sure, Denny is still there, but after last night, who knows? Remember, Fossil has roots in Arizona, serving as an assistant coach for the Cardinals back in the day. Just thinking illogically, Mac and some of
them. Let me tell you something about Jim Fossil.
But that's good thinking. That's good illogical thinking. We like that because PFW in Progress is your home for illogical thinking.
Right. And one thing about Jim Fossil is he always has that resume ready. He's always selling himself on an interview, or him and Denny Green are the two best out-of-work salesmen that you'll ever want to see. So if there's a job opening somewhere, you can bet Jim Fossil sent a video, a fax, something.
Okay, let's see. Dave is in Buford, Georgia. I have just seen a poll on the NFL website. I'm sorry, a poll. It says pool, but he meant a poll on the NFL website asking who could hand Chicago its first defeat. The Patriots lead with 41%. What do you think? Do you think that we ought to wait till after the next couple of weeks to tell for sure? From what I've seen of Chicago's schedule, it does seem like the Patriots have the best shot.
Well,
I don't have Chicago's schedule in front of me, do you?
I know that they go to the Giants.
That'd be a tough game.
That's a tough game. That's two games before the Patriots. My guess
plus, at that time of year, now you're talking early November in the Meadowlands, a very difficult place to play.
And the Giants are a team that shuts down the run, and maybe they're a team to watch. They play Dallas this week. Maybe they're one of those teams that's about to get going here a little bit. So I don't know. My guess is the Bears are not undefeated when they come here. I think they'll lose a game.
Yeah, I don't think they'll be undefeated either. And I think that game, I would love it for it to be the Patriots with one loss and Chicago undefeated, just because I like that kind of matchup.
Yeah,
you know.
So would NBC.
Yeah, well, maybe rethinking it. Maybe maybe both teams can stumble a little bit, so they leave the game alone.
Nice 1 o'clock start.
Yeah, I just found out that my wife switched off of a day to get on that Monday. So she's now working that Monday after the Bears game because she looked at the schedule and said, it's a 1 o'clock game at home. What's the big deal?
Right.
Well, now there's a chance that I might not even be home in time for her to leave for work. See what I'm doing there?
Yeah.
You know, if it's a night game.
If it's a night game, yeah, we definitely won't.
I'll have to leave early from an overnight. I mean, that'll be great. Anyway.
I bet you Andy won't have anything to say about that.
No, but usually, as was the case today, that he's usually able to keep his mouth shut on those things because, you know, he never comes and goes as he pleases. Anyway, Gary is in Syracuse, not Gary in our studio. It's a different Gary. What do you guys think, and we haven't even talked about this, Tom. What do you guys think of the Miami Hurricanes brawl? I thought it was funny that Miami suspended the guys that were swinging his helmet like a weapon indefinitely, but the captain and starter that was stepping on anyone he could find
right.
and then running like a little girl is just suspended for one game. Interesting.
Good point. Good point.
Very good point. I don't know the ins and outs of who got. I know the numbers, but I don't know.
Merriweather is the guy who only got suspended for one game. He's the one who was stopped. That's.
I saw a guy stop, but I didn't realize it was
ESPN, a captain. ESPN, whose college football coverage is excellent. So I don't want to sound like I'm piling on because I don't like ESPN. But as far as college football and basketball go, they are excellent.
They do a great job.
And the one problem I had with that, the fight is they kept focusing on the guy swinging the helmet. And as I was watching it, I kept saying, oh, come on, I'm not talking about the guy who's stomping on everybody.
And just the way Gary, the emailer, described it, is exactly what happened. He kept kicking people and stomping on their chest and then running away.
Yeah.
That was worse than Albert Haynesworth, for God's sakes. He kept running away. For whatever reason, Albert Haynesworth just had an out-of-body experience and flipped out. I mean, this guy, he was running away like a little girl. That's exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, and that just shows Larry Coker is in big trouble there. Let's just put it that way. And that whole situation was an ugly, ugly situation. And the problem with me was I understand the fight. Like we were talking on here last week, I said The Rock in his game with Miami got in a fight with Colorado. There was a huge brawl with Colorado before the half. So it has happened before. The problem I had and the thing that looks bad on Larry Coker was Miami celebrating it at the end of the game, like they had done something by beating Florida International 34-0. To me, that is the biggest black eye for Larry Coker.
I think Coker's got to go.
Yeah, oh, he's gone. Yeah,
he was probably going to lose his job anyway because they're not winning to the standards that Miami needs to win. But he has such a lack of institutional control over his team. He's the one that had that comment before the season. We're sort of against having our players carry firearms or something along those lines. I mean, Come on, Larry.
You know what Miami is?
Time to go.
They're
away.
A tight-knit group of former players and backers, and when those people get upset, they start putting a lot of pressure on the administration, people like the Michael Irvins and the Ray Lewis's of the world.
Just to show you how tight they are, I mean, you know, you heard Lamar Thomas's, ridiculous rant as the color guy of the local telecast,
yeah.
You know, talking about wanting to go down the elevator and get involved in it himself. You know, speaking of things that kind of flew under the radar and were kind of underrated, he goes through this long rant and he's talking about, that's what I'm talking about. They can't come into the OB and do this to us and all this. And he's advocating the fight, basically.
Right.
Did you happen to hear in the middle of that, he said, they came from across the ocean? Then he corrected himself and said, across the city, on the other side of the city. Across the ocean. What a rockhead. I mean, obviously, based on his comments, we know the guy doesn't have too much going on upstairs. But across the ocean? Talk about an underrated line that just slipped through and no one really even criticized.
And a good point to be made here on that is that the last time Miami was so out of control that they had to stop it and, you know, kind of rein it in, Lamar Thomas was part of those teams. So this is probably something he's used to doing. The difference is back then they were beating good teams.
Right.
Now you lose to every good team you play. You whoop on Florida International, who I should point out is 0-6.
And by the way, didn't whoop on them all that bad. It was 14-0 at the time of the brawl.
Right. So I would probably worry about more winning some big games instead of beating up Florida International and not letting them come into your house and teaching them a lesson.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Tom. Lamar Thomas, wasn't he the guy in the big game, the big
George
Sugar Bowl
T.
game?
Caught him.
And took the ball right out of his
George
hand.
George T. caught him from behind.
It's exactly the play I was thinking about. Yeah. Well, that's the kind of toughness that you're looking for. I'll get involved in a brawl so I can maybe stomp on some guy's chest while three of my teammates are holding him down.
Right.
But if I'm running down the field with the ball, someone might come from behind me and just take it right out
of
my hands.
That was a huge play in that game.
Turned the whole game around.
Because the
momentum was going toward Miami at that time.
If they had scored there on that play, it could have been different.
Gary's email continues here. What do you guys think of the collapse of the Cardinals? I have a theory about this one. They tried to do what New England does. They get a lead and sit on it and play field position and killing time by running it down the other team's throat. But the difference is New England is a good team and the Cardinals are not there yet. Matt Leinart did look good, though. Friday I asked a question about Boston College moving to the ACC. I think you guys misunderstood my question. I know that BC is in the ACC and not in the Big East, but my question wasn't, isn't that going to hurt BC recruiting now that all of their away games are so far away. I don't think we misunderstood the question. I just don't think that it's going to hurt them. I think they're playing at a higher level, and I think kids would rather play against Miami and Florida State and Virginia Tech.
Still the name recognition.
And Clemson and Wake Forest and North Carolina State rather than Pitt and
Florida State.
UConn and West Virginia.
Florida State used to be a terrible program. Now Rutgers used to be a terrible program. Now if they continue to do this year in and year out for 15, 20 years, then maybe Rutgers means Florida State. But right now, Rutgers doesn't mean Florida State. It still means Rutgers. Nobody cares about them.
And just, you know, and I know that Gary's from Syracuse, so obviously he's got some Big East background with the Orange and whatnot. To put it in, Syracuse is following when Syracuse is good, and I think Gary also talked about how there were a lot of fair weather fans, and Jason was here that day subbing for Gary, and Jason went to Syracuse as well, talking about how they're a little bit of fair weather fans. I would venture to say the fan base for Syracuse is exponentially larger and more passionate and more loyal than BC's. BC is a very, what have you done for me lately, bandwagon crowd. They had a big game against Virginia Tech last week. They showed up. They were there. They were passionate. They were loud. But still pales in comparison to a real, quote-unquote, real program. And even though I hate BC and make no bones about it, this is not meant to be a slam on them. This is a pro town. This is a pro sports town. They only get excited around here for events in college. They're not going to fall. In other words, what I'm trying to say is, when BC is playing West Virginia, and it might be for all the marbles, or if they're playing Syracuse, BC is going to have friends and family in the stands in Syracuse. They're not going to travel with 20,000 people like Nebraska would.
Right.
You know, if Nebraska was playing
Nebraska can play anywhere, and I got to see a red.
If Nebraska's playing at Texas in a Big 12 game, you know, there's going to be a significant amount of red in the stands for Nebraska. That ain't happening with BC, whether they're playing UConn or Syracuse. It doesn't matter how far away. So I don't think you're losing much by playing Clemson and Wake Forest and those teams instead of the teams that maybe geographically are a little closer. So
right.
I hope that maybe answers the question a little bit better.
You have to see if these teams in the Big East can sustain this for over a period of time. You figure Florida State and Miami, with the recruits that they get, if they make a coaching change here or there, they're going to be back on top, whereas is West Virginia going to be this good every year? So it could swing back to the ACC rather quickly.
Sean is up again, says that Indy question about who would win the Super Bowl as an AFC, he's talking about John's trivia question. As an AFC champ and an NFC champ, well, you're sort of right. The Colts made the Super Bowl as an NFL rep against the Jets.
Right, against the AFL.
But in 1970, the leagues merged, and the Colts were the first team as a member of the AFC against the Cowboys. So the Colts were a member of the AFC, not the NFC, when they won the Super Bowl. Again, I'm like Paul, full of useless knowledge. Hey, thanks, I think. So, yeah, because they were an NFL team when they lost to the Jets.
They lost
it is
the
what
Jets.
It is.
But in 70, when they came into the league, they crossed over and went to the AFC. So that's not accurate. Yeah, that's. I think Sean's right.
I think he is, too.
Great job on and Tom, you're no boob. I know some Pats fans are taking shots at you. You're doing a good job as well.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Who's taking the good shot? Who's taking
that
shots said,
at great you? Great job on EEI, Paul, by the way, Tom.
Yeah, no, I read that. I skipped over it. Thanks.
Last week I think some guys on the message board were hitting me pretty hard for the Chad Jackson.
Right. Oh, yeah, for your unfair characterization of the guy who made a fool of himself at the gala. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
You're not going to fall for the banana and the tailpipe?
Every single time I have, like, the little soda bubble that's still in my thing. He has to play that clip. Jason is next up. Moss talk heating up. I am sure there are many thoughts. My only concerns are, if Coach B has talked to him and is convinced he will not be a problem, or if he makes a real problem in the locker room. If there is no problem with either, then I do not see any so-called malcontent Dylan made it here, and if Moss can be the same, I say bring him in. I think Tom would echo those thoughts. We're all rooting for that, by the way, just for the pure drama.
And Paul, I think you would agree with this. On the way back from the TV show, me and Andy were talking about this, and there's one word that can define everything. The word is winning. Corey Dillon hasn't lost here, okay? He lost in Cincinnati. Randy Moss comes here, he's probably not going to lose. As long as you win, guys like that are okay. The problem you get is what happens if you start losing, he's not getting the ball.
I've said that all along with Dillon. Dillon right now has been great. He has been fantastic with Lawrence Maroney.
Yeah.
If they were 1-4 and not 4-1, I wonder if he would be the same way.
Right. It's a winning.
Fortunately, the Patriots never have to find out.
They don't lose. So that's why the Moss situation would probably work here, because he would be winning. He'd be getting his share of passes. God knows Brady would hit him on the run. So I don't think it would be a problem, because he wouldn't really have anything to complain about.
Right. So Jason continues. My other question about last night's game, and I have not seen a replay today to see if I am correct or not, but why did the ref? Who was the ref last night?
Was it Hockley? I was kind of out of it. I was a lot of cold.
No, it wasn't Hockley, because Hockley did the Seattle game.
Seattle game, right, yeah.
Why did the ref swallow his whistle on James's run? It seems so much like forward progress was made and that one of the Bears was even holding him up, and yet no whistle. Did they forget about that rule and allowing the fumble to count? Just a horrible call. The poor Cardinal play has overshadowed that bogus call, and again, that was the catalyst to this loss. Very sad. I do wish to see it again from the side of the fumble. I know last night I could not believe the whistle was fumbled as well. I didn't really get a good look at it.
I would have to watch it again to see if that was.
I agree. I agree. It could be, though. It did look like it was kind of a pile up, and then all of a sudden a guy from the Bears just ran out the other side.
It was a weird play. Like the guy, but since no one made a big stink of it, I just figured the ball was
coming
out.
Loose?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd have to see one. I think that the email of Jason's right. I'd like to see the from the opposite sideline, that reverse angle shot.
I haven't seen that angle.
I haven't either. And just to address an email that we got earlier about the Cardinals, I don't think the Cardinals should have gone into a shell. You don't want to take chances against the Chicago Bears by dropping back too many times, putting the ball up. They did absolutely what you're supposed to do to salt away a win, and Edgerrin James fumbled twice.
He should have won.
If Edgerrin James doesn't fumble twice, you win the game, just like the Patriots would have. You don't sit there and say, I have a quarterback making his second career start, and I'm going to try to salt away a victory in the fourth quarter by putting it in his hands. That's not what you do to win.
A fumble return and a punt return for a touchdown in 2 minutes. What are you going to do? I mean, maybe the special team should have tackled Devin Hester, because God knows Rex Grossman wasn't going to lead him down the field.
It's two for him,
field.
By the way, right?
Yeah.
Devin Hester? Good for him. He's a guy that we didn't think that had a position. All he could do was be a return guy.
Yeah, well.
So if you can only do one thing, Bill says it. Bill says it. You better be exceptionally good at it. Brian is next up. Kansas City has the cap space for Randy Moss. They could use a threat to take some of the focus off of LJ, and Eddie Kennison is a decent number two receiver, but not a one. When Green gets back, it could really improve their offense. He's in snowy Colorado, by the way, Brian.
I think Kansas City had a lot of cap room. I'm not really the capologist.
I'm not a capologist right now either, and I don't always believe the numbers that I see in terms of cap space on websites and whatnot.
But then now we're talking about, again, do you think the Raiders would trade Randy Moss to the Chiefs? I mean, it's not going to happen.
Oh,
that wouldn't
I didn't even think of that, but that's not happening.
That's like saying Denver wants him.
Wanted to get to Jen's email, because Jen is my favorite all-time emailer, and I haven't seen her email in a lot.
This might have to do with me saying something about Mike Hart.
Mike Hart. that might come up. Let's see.
I sound like I'm 16.
Just a couple of thoughts. Last night's Bears game, having seen all their games and the way they've manhandled teams, seems to me that perhaps the Bears were just looking past the Cardinals to the bye week. Sure, the defense finally came out in the second half and looked good, but I think that Rex just couldn't get over the major mistakes he made, so the offense never got on track. But I really think it had more to do with overlooking the Cardinals than anything else. Speaking of the Bears-Pats game you guys had just mentioned, I'm really hoping that the game doesn't get moved to 8 o'clock. I'm heading out for that game, and I was planning on actually leaving Sunday night. If the game gets moved, that's going to completely screw up my travel plans. Dang it. I mean, it could get moved to Monday night, and I'd be staying to watch that, but I prefer it being at 1 o'clock. Jen, you'll have to send us an email, by the way. Let us know when you're coming. I know you blew us off the last time, but we're not going to let you get away with it again.
A big party here for that Bears game.
Yeah,
everyone's coming.
Be James, Jen, you know, maybe Jen's husband, who's the big Nebraska fan, if I remember correctly. Yeah. As to the Moss trade rumors, okay, so it probably won't happen, but this is why I like Jen, because Jen's rational. She knows it's probably not going to happen,
right,
but she has fun with it. I actually wouldn't mind seeing him in a Patriots uniform. Living out here in the Midwest and having seen a lot of him when he was in Minnesota, he's not quite as bad as he seems. I know it sounds like the old, if Bledsoe had an offensive line and a wide receiver and a running back, then he would be great. But if Moss had a head coach with some balls, I mean, can you really imagine Belichick standing by and just letting Moss pick and choose what plays he would be out on the field for? Somehow I think if Moss sidelined himself, BB would have him sidelined for the rest of the game. Tice just let it go. And in Oakland, haven't seen enough to know whether he's pulling the same stuff out there, so I can't comment on that. I just think that his attitude might be adjusted if he came to the Patriots. I mean, Dylan hasn't been troublesome since coming to New England. And yeah, I know this entire thing is pretty pointless, but because nothing's going to come out of it. But hey, if everyone else can speculate, then so can I.
Well,
I agree.
And Paul, I think you agree with me on this. People want Randy Moss here because he scores touchdowns and no other reason. You don't know these people. You don't know what kind of people they are off the field. You want them because you root for the Patriots, and Randy Moss is a good football player. I just get – it really bothers me when they say, well, you know, we got to get this kind of person. Listen, you want the best football players on your team that you can possibly get so you can win football games. It's not like you're inviting these guys over for dinner. Did anybody want Ty Law kicked off the team when he went up to that trip for Canada? I wasn't here, but I doubt it.
Not,
I doubt
not
it.
Not too many. And they weren't. And just so you know, they weren't very good then. They were 5-11, and they had clearly on the way down, it appeared. So it wasn't like all his goodwill had, you know,
right,
he had earned. No, I agree with you. And look, the Moss thing, I agree with Jen. It's probably not going to happen. But I'm just saying, I don't think that Bill would dismiss it as out of hand, because that's not the way he operates.
You know, he operates to win football games.
Exactly. And that's what he's supposed to do. And he does it the right way. if he thinks this guy can come in here and help the team, he's going to explore those possibilities.
I mean, yeah, there is a chance that Bill and Corey Dillon don't even like each other. There's a chance. But if Bill believes that he could come in here, not hurt the locker room, and win football games, I don't think Bill cares if he's friends with you or not. You know, if he doesn't think Randy Moss is going to be a problem to the team and can help his team win football games, he'll do everything he can to get him here.
It looks like Dan in Fairfax, Virginia, is going to transition us to that around the league look because he has some non-Patriots NFL talk. Wanted to chime in and name Rams coach Scott Linehan taking over for Bill Cowher or Al Davis as the crybaby about the refs and rules guy. I read he was complaining about the last 10 seconds of the Rams versus Seahawks game. To recap, the Seahawks were within long field goal range with the clock running down with 4 seconds and no timeouts. They went to spike the ball, and the ref threw a flag. The Rams celebrated, assuming it was a false start penalty, and expected a 10-second runoff, but it was actually a flag for illegal formation. The ref clearly said it was a post-snap penalty, not a pre-snap penalty, and there would be no 10-second runoff. The Seahawks were pushed back 5 yards, but still had 4 seconds and wound up making the field goal to win the game. I read that Linehan is now complaining about it not being a 10-second runoff. Note, he didn't complain that the ref got the wrong call, but complained it was a bad rule. And teams may now try to strategically get an illegal formation call to stop the clock in the last 10 seconds. I just want to say that is one of the dumbest sour grapes complaints I have read in a long time. What good does it do to try to get an illegal formation? You can stop the clock with a spike anyway, so how does it help you to line up and be set just in the wrong spot? It is a penalty that doesn't get called until the play is over. It is a strategically boneheaded move to intentionally get in an illegal formation when you're going to spike the ball. All you get is pushed 5 yards further back, not to mention you need to coordinate with your players to line up incorrectly, which would probably take more time than the 10 seconds available. Is there something I am missing on this? And I got to tell you something. Rarely does an emailer put my thoughts so clearly on a topic. I couldn't agree more. First of all, the whole celebration thing rubbed me the wrong way. And Dan just described the whole scenario.
Yeah.
There was 4 seconds left. The penalty came up. Just the fact that they were celebrating, it was almost like, you know, that little weasel that you played with in, like, intramurals or,
right,
like, in recreation men's sports that rooted for
what
the forfeit?
What kind of coach celebrates before the game's over?
What kind of coach celebrates winning a game on a technicality? I mean, what if that was a false start penalty? I mean, that you celebrate that? When you win a game like that because of a 10-second runoff, you know, you wipe your brow and say, whew, you know, we dodged a bullet, you know, I'm happy we won. But, I mean, are you really that did you see him on the sideline?
Yeah, he was going nuts.
I mean, he was going crazy. He was high-fiving his assistants.
There's a lot we could talk about that game, but there's one thing that I'd like to talk about that no one's talked about. When I used to write my fantasy column, I was known to give Mike Holmgren some crap every now and then for some just weird, weird things that he does during a game. That handoff to Max Strong, has anybody ever thought, what if Max Strong got 9 yards on that play? Because if he did, the game was over. What was he doing?
That was a bad call.
I mean, what if he breaks it and goes 30 yards and he gets...
I suppose if he breaks it, he could probably get to the sideline. But that's a big chance you're taking. That's a bad call.
That was a bad call. This is it. I mean, you're in field goal range. You either throw one to the sidelines or you spike it and you bring out your unit. What are you trying to get, 2 yards?
I agree with Dan. You know, I totally agree with what you just said. It was a ridiculously bad call. But what I'm wondering about with this Linehan thing, first of all, the reason the false start is a 10-second runoff in that situation is because you're clearly snapping the ball before you're ready to have it snapped.
Right.
So you're trying to stop the clock by getting a penalty. If you're lined up, but you don't have the proper amount of guys on the line, but everybody's lined up and set, that's not an intention to stop the clock. You're trying to start the play.
Yeah.
Dan said it perfectly.
Why not
just, it takes as much time to line up incorrectly as it does to line up correctly.
Right.
So why would you do that on purpose? It's sour grapes. It's not a bad rule.
I'm going to tell you something right now. I've already started hearing it in the national media. There'll be a rule change, but they're already...
I'll tell you one thing. I think the whole 10-second runoff thing, that's a bad rule, I think. But they have it, and what are you going to do? But I like I said, the whole Linehan thing rubbed me the wrong way. To be that excited to win a game on a technicality, to me, was kind of cheesy. You know, it was a great football game. It was a great finish. It had three or four major swings in momentum down the stretch. But to be that excited to win because the other team got a penalty.
In week five, to, or whatever week we're five or six, I have a problem with coaches who celebrate too much. I know Pete Carroll's a great college coach, but
woo!
I can't stand those guys who jump up and down. I'm more your Belichick Landry
we
type
like to
of
have
guy.
Fun.
I don't mind if you show some emotion, like Cowher, like even Belichick will put his arms up
well,
in the air.
I think Cowher is a fiery guy, but I don't
right.
think he's a cheerleader.
Right.
I think there's a difference.
Cheerleaders. Those are the guys.
Those
are the ones that rub me the wrong way.
Yeah, I agree. I think you can be under control, and it's fun. You know, I don't necessarily criticize guys that show a lot of emotion, but I kind of would prefer the guys that are just enthusiastically excited about their team, but yet seeming like they're in charge.
Right.
He was
jumping around more than probably a lot of fans, or Rams fans, were in their living rooms. You know what I mean? Like, it was unprofessional, and I agree. It sounds like a lot of sour grapes coming from him.
You know, and another example of guys not knowing the rules, Matt Hasselbeck after the game. You know, thank God Ed Hockley, you know, knew the rule. Huh? He's the referee.
Yeah. If the referee...
I didn't know the rule. Well, yeah, shame on you. You're a quarterback for an NFL team, and you don't know the rules of the game that you're playing?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. That's a little silly. It wasn't exactly like an obscure rule. You know, it's not like, you know, the whole tuck thing where... You know, maybe you were aware of that, maybe you weren't. It was not an obscure rule.
Right. And it's funny because we're getting a lot of emails about the Bears not being for real, but we haven't gotten any emails on our boy Deion Branch.
Yeah, no, you won't be getting any of those either.
He looked big time in that game.
All right, let's look to Pratt in Germantown, Maryland. I try to listen every day. Love to hear about the possibilities and impossible trades concerning the Patriots. Looking forward to the Colts game. Because I truly think that they can beat the Bills and Vikings despite playing on the road. Case in point, Cincinnati, they played on the road in a game that everyone, including myself, thought would be a loss. They can win these two games realistically. Well, I would say that they'll be significantly favored to
see,
do
I know
so
no one
road.
Agrees with me, but I feel like the Vikings could be a tough game.
Oh, I think it could be a tough game, but I think they'll be favored.
No, they'll be favored, yeah.
I have a feeling Gabriel and Jackson are going to step in because I read an article in the Herald about Gabriel wanting to be a player to step up and make some down-the-field kinds of plays. Of course, we've yet to see that. but I think they should start developing their passing game over the next 2 weeks while the running game does most of the damage so they can be ready to go almost stride for stride with the Colts. I have both Gabriel and Troy Brown on my fantasy squad, and I want to start one of them. Which one would you suggest against the Bills' pass defense? And that's Pratt in Maryland. Troy Brown.
Yeah, I would start Troy Brown, too.
And I would get, if you can, new receivers.
Yeah. I also agree with that. You know, I'm working on the Vikings now for this upcoming issue. They're fourth against the run in the NFL. They have the similar kind of athletic linebackers that the Broncos and Dolphins have.
Henderson.
Henderson has a resurgence under Childress. He's finally started to play well. They have Ben Lieber. They have Napoleon Harris that they trade, the Randy
yep.
Moss trade. They have those two big Williams in the middle, Pat and whatchamacallit, the real good one.
Kevin.
Kevin Williams in the middle. So if we get back into one of those situations where the Patriots can't run and are forced to pass, those games haven't turned out well for them. So just don't overlook that game. It's a tough place to play. It's loud. It's going to be a Monday nighter. The Bills, you can overlook them. You don't
That'll
have
be the whole key for that Minnesota game. We'll get into that, obviously, next week. But if the Vikings can control the running game, now you're in your dome and you're making it be all passing.
Yeah.
When all passing really hasn't worked very well so far. So now you're on the road. You're probably more susceptible to a mistake or two. You know, maybe the Vikings can hang around in that situation.
And don't forget, the Patriots know the Colts are the next week too, and you got to figure they're foaming at the mouth to get back to the Colts. And I know they do a very good job of looking week to week, but just watch out for that Vikings game. That's one of them ones that looks like it's sneaking around the chicken coop.
Okay, Jay is in Hanson. He said, "I just looked up the FIFA site and they have a list of artificial surfaces." Surface licensees and field surface listed as one. In addition, they also have a list of stadiums that have acceptable artificial surfaces. Currently, there are no U.S. stadiums with an acceptable surface, so Gillette could be the first FIFA artificial surface in the United States. So you can
with more false information.
So you can have artificial surface and play those FIFA international games. So that's good stuff. Thanks thanks for that. Let's see. Jen is up again. Wow, Jen. Haven't heard from Jen in a long time. She emails in twice. Tom, thank you so much. I have not heard one thing about Miami celebrating after the game. Every time I saw the clip with the players raising their helmets up, first, it's FIU. Secondly, after the crap that happened, they should have just walked off the damn field. The post-game celebration annoyed me almost more than the damn fight. I agree.
That was embarrassing to the entire university.
Let's see. And if I have to hear one more time about how great Lionheart looked last night, cripes, Joe and Tony practically had him in the hall last night.
They did go over the edge. I'll give you that one.
Lionheart got TDs when he was given a short field, when he actually had to go all the way down the field, field goals or nada. I'm not sure. I'm sure even Ryan Leaf could score touchdowns if he only had to go 20 yards. Not to mention that the Bears had one game tape to go off. Not a lot to help game plan. Hell, the Cardinals probably aren't even fully familiar with their offense with Lionheart out there. How about we let him play at least three, maybe four games before we put him in the Hall of Fame?
Well, I thought
he looked pretty good.
He looked pretty good
in
the two games that he's played. I mean, you can't take anything away from him.
No one's putting him in the Hall of Fame, and I know that Joe thinks every quarterback looks great. I mean, Joe's so bad that he offended me once complimenting Drew Bledsoe. That's all I need to tell you. He said something so positive about Drew Bledsoe that it made me upset.
Yeah,
I think that tells all our listeners. Everybody knows how I feel about Bledsoe. I mean, that tells it all.
Drew. They love me everywhere I go.
He threw a pass to Terry Glenn in the preseason that Glenn jumped up, reached around the defender, and made an unbelievable catch on a fade in the end zone. I think it was against New Orleans. And it was a touchdown. And Thijs made the comment, perfect throw by Bledsoe, put it where only his guy could get it. It was the most ridiculous comment that you could possibly come up with. And that's for my guy.
But to defend Jen, those two were overboard last night, just going nonstop on them.
Okay, this is perfect kind of question for you here, Tom. Joe is in Nashville. Stupid question time. If a player records four tackles and one sack, does the sack represent one of those four tackles, or is it another play? Can you give me the answer to that, Tom?
Is the sack a tackle? I would say no.
It is.
It is a tackle.
Yes, it's four tackles, including a sack. Not in addition, you know, it wouldn't be five total tackles.
I have no idea.
It would be four. One of them was a sack.
Right. That's what I meant.
Oh, okay.
I didn't think it was an extra one.
Okay. Yeah. No. Then you were right then. Likewise, if a quarterback throws an interception as one of his incomplete passes, or is it one of his incomplete passes or only one of his attempts? It's.
I don't have the slightest.
Considered
idea.
Incomplete. Yes. And it would count as an attempt and. Just would be an interception. Like we have the box with Brady's incompletions, and one of the categories is interceptions. So
the chickens have large talons.
Once again, stupid questions. PFW in progress is your place.
Do the chickens have large talons?
Large talons. Mike is next up.
Is it possible to have a collapsed lung for a short period of time and then have it not collapse?
Not that, Mike. And I don't know where Mike is, though. I think somewhere in Western Mass, though. I've looked before, but I am pretty sure that the Patriots do not offer guided tours of Gillette Stadium. Some other teams do, but apparently not ours. Is this correct? And if so, can I send one of you guys an iPod for a private tour also? Gary, do you have any info on that tour?
I have an iPod.
Do you have any info on the tour?
I believe we do not do tours. Unless Andy takes someone around.
And the iPod thing, it only works with me because I'm the only human being other than Paul that doesn't own one.
I have a...
That's right.
I bought one for my wife.
So I was the only human being on the planet without one.
I'm the only human being on the planet that actually has one and has never actually listened to it, never used it. In immortal Andy Hartism, no interest. Now, that will be accurate if I just have no interest. So Mike is looking for tours, and unfortunately, I guess we don't know. I don't really know why. Maybe that's something we could look into and maybe we can talk about on a future show. I don't know why, the Crafts don't offer those. I know Fenway Park does.
Yeah, I gotta be honest with you. There's not much to see.
It's a football field. Yeah. I suppose it would be cool to see maybe the suites and the club, the Patriots clubhouse. But other than that, underneath, you're not missing anything.
No.
It's just the same as all the other stadiums. It's underneath
a bunch
the stands.
Of offices and.
I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, but maybe we can look into that. But Tom, some of the other stuff in the games, that Seattle game, I just want to state here too. I was about 30 seconds in a yard away from a pretty legendary week of picks, and between the fumble by
Morris.
He fumbles and cost me a cover in the Seattle game because Seattle was favored by 3. They only won by 2. They were up by 6 with less than 2 minutes left inside the Rams' 10-yard line. All they had to do was fall down and run the clock out, kick a field goal, whatever they wanted to do. Anyway, that cost me a cover. And then the ridiculous, we didn't even touch on this. You touched on it with Mike Carey, your favorite ref. The Tampa Bay game, I don't know what a sack is anymore. I saw the play several times yesterday. I'm sorry, but you just can't call roughing the passer on that play. You can't.
And you know what? Hide the women and children next year when those refs come for that thing, because I'm going to start asking questions about Mike Carey. I'm sick and tired of watching this guy. Every week he's throwing 7. What has he got, better eyesight than everybody else? He's got 10 more penalties than every other referee every single week.
I just can't imagine
that. And he's
caught.
Now, what if the Bengals don't go to the playoffs by one game? He cost that team a playoff spot because his idiotic call. That is about... We always throw this phrase around, the worst call I've ever seen. That's about as bad a call that I can ever remember seeing. Absolutely horrendous.
Yeah, I mean, and I would say that, look, I don't care. I mean, I made a pick. I picked Cincinnati, okay? And that cost me a cover. It cost my poor mother-in-law gets knocked out of the knockout pool. So it was a pick. Well, I did have something, some sort of interest in the game. But it's also right and wrong.
Yeah.
You know, just like I'll tell you this. They originally called the touchdown at the end of the game, the game-winning touchdown. They originally called it on the field incomplete. They went to replay and overturned it and called it a touchdown. That was right.
Right.
Even though I lost the game because they overturned it on replay, it was a right call. It should have been overturned. The original call was bad. He caught the ball and got in the end zone before he lost it. So sometimes it's right and wrong. Justin Smith did nothing on that play to warrant a flag. He didn't drill him into the ground. He didn't pick him up and throw him down. I mean, at some point you just have to wonder, what is roughing the passer?
Yeah,
what is it?
And the hypocrisy in this whole thing is Justin Smith said some things after the game. Now the league is going to fine him when they should be fining Mike Carey.
Well, Mike Carey should be out of a job.
Yeah, that's
based on what I've seen.
And that's why I refer to the referee system as communist in one of my SPFWs where I got in trouble. Because that's what it's like. You say something about it, and the league finds you. Meanwhile, they'll come out and say, no, the refs made the right call. Don't insult our intelligence. If you say that's the right call, you're insulting everybody's intelligence.
That's what gets me more upset on these things, Tom, than anything, is that constantly they're making these calls and telling us after the fact it was the right call.
Right. Just come out and say it was a mistake.
That's all you can do. All you can do is get the calls right as often as you possibly can. That's all you can do. You can't ensure that every call is called correctly. You can't do it. It's impossible. So stop telling us every time one of these questionable calls is made that it's the right call every time. The odds of that are negligible. There's no way human beings could never be wrong. That's what it drives me crazy. Brian, who used to work here, Brian Morey, he used to argue with me all the time because I used to say that they never... You know, and he would rattle off. Well, they said they admitted they were wrong after.
Count them on one hand.
Exactly. We're going back. We're talking about 20 years maybe worth of watching the NFL closely enough to remember like a bad call or remember what was said after it. You know, and I could count on one hand the amount of times Vinny Testaverde was awarded a touchdown at the end of a game, and Sparks bringing replay back that the NFL actually admitted that the call was wrong. What are you going to do? I don't think you probably made Seattle feel any better that day when the NFL admitted it, but at least there was wrongdoing, and you know. You know what I mean? There's no cloud. That's not going to make Cincinnati feel any better today if Mike Carey is publicly, ridiculed by the league and said, you know, they admit that there was a mistake made, but at least they look at it and say, well, at least they saw what I saw.
And you know what?
Marvin Lewis he said, I guess you just have to cuddle these guys.
Right. I think
maybe he's right.
I think it changes the fans' perception, too. I think fans have more respect if the head of the head of the referees came out and said, you know what, we blew it. We apologize to the Bengals that, you know, we're sorry. We'll try to get it right the next time. If you say something like that, it's my Bill Clinton theory. If he had just said, ah, shoot, I did it. You know, I think everyone would have just said, eh, what are you going to do? Instead, he lied. And that's the problem I think most people had with that. And I think that's what we have with the director of officials, is he's just blatantly lying to us. Just say it was a bad call. Okay,
I agree. Gary is talking about, Gary's in Columbus, Ohio. A lot of Gary's today. He watched the Cardinals game last night, doesn't know much about them, but he knows that their offensive line has been terrible for 10 years. They draft high almost every year. Why do they still have no offensive line? Tom, why don't you? I know you probably know some of the individuals. They had a couple of draft picks.
Leonard Davis, L.J. Shelton have all, you know, Leonard Davis is still there, but
they've addressed some of these with draft picks and just haven't gotten the right guys.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, we talked.
Brandon Gordon.
Well, and that's why during draft time we talked about DeBrickashaw Ferguson. And I said, you know, you can name your Tony Baselli's and stuff, but I just think that position, and the Patriots do it better than anyone, is a position where you can get talent either later in the draft or develop guys. Because if you have a good line coach, like we've talked about on this show before, like Skarnecchia or Hudson Hauk, those guys, you can get guys in the third, fourth, fifth round and develop them into starters. It's the reason why I don't believe taking one in the top five. I just think it's too big of a risk, and you can get guys down the line or you can develop if you have good coaching at that position. So apparently this has been a combination of the players haven't fit and not the right coaching staff, but for whatever reason, he's right. It seems like since as far back as I can remember, we've been talking about the Cardinals' line struggling.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, and I agree with your drafting philosophy with offensive linemen as well. I don't see the need to use a top five pick on a lineman. Every once in a while, one comes along. But what I wonder is, how much better is a guy like Jonathan Ogden or Orlando Pace, you know, who's obviously great careers, great careers as top five left tackles. How much better are they than Matt Light? You know, I'm not saying they're not better. They are better, and they have been better. But how much better to warrant, you know, a round and a half difference in draft selection?
Is it a difference in teams winning Super Bowls or not? You know what I mean? Like, I understand those guys are great players and everything. I just don't feel you need to pick them. In the top five, man, I want that difference maker. I want a guy who's going to change my entire team. Now, obviously, the Houston Texans disagreed with me. So, you see how they're doing.
All right. David is next up, and he says, and I told you some of these would be coming in shortly, but I think, first of all, he wants to give you props, Tom. I think you hit the nail right on the head. We want Moss because he gets in the end zone. Can you imagine Brady to Moss? It just sounds sweet. And here's where it gets to my point. Also, is there any of you gentlemen that feel the Bears are extremely overrated?
I thought last week that they were overrated if you compare them to the 85 Bears. I remember teams would run and hide from that defense. Quarterbacks were scared to death to play that defense. And I think this is just the way it is, because a lot of people watching NFL right now probably didn't see that team, or we kind of forget. That team was dominant. Domination, 15-1. It took a Hall of Fame, arguably the greatest quarterback of all time, on a Monday night to stop them from perfection. That's what it took.
Yeah. If you remember that big tip pass for a touchdown, that was the key to the game.
I mean, in the playoffs, they didn't give up a touchdown until New England scored one.
A point.
Yeah.
They didn't give up a point until New England scored.
New England scored in the Super Bowl. And, you know, it's just, that's domination. So I just, that's my biggest problem, is when they start compare all the 85 Bears. No, absolutely not.
James is in Roanoke Rapids. He says, I saw a replay of that play, and I was wondering, he's talking about the fumble last night. I was wondering why the whistle did not blow then. Also, James's forward momentum was stopped, and he was wrapped up by two or three players, and Urlacher stripped the ball while he was being held up. The whistle was suspiciously absent then. The Cardinals just got sloppy, and the Bears' defense and special teams took over the game. But the Cardinals' kicker is the one who really lost it for them, as he hits every field goal except for the ones that can win the game. And that's James. Yeah, no, it seems like that was kind of the opinion I had of that fumble, too. And I just saw, by the way, I didn't realize. The other fumble, people were criticizing Dennis Green for being conservative. I saw the first fumble was on a blindside on Matt Leinart.
Yeah.
What's conservative about that?
Nothing you can do about that.
You know, I don't really understand the criticism of a coach.
That's like saying that the year the Giants won the Super Bowl with their mastermind staff when Roger Craig fumbled when they were running the clock out. That's like saying they were being too conservative. I mean, sometimes those things just happen. LT managed to make a great play, rip the ball out, and the Giants end up beating the Bills in the Super Bowl. But the Niners were doing the right thing. The game was over. They're running
the clock
out.
Over.
What happened last night, you could play 500 more football games and you wouldn't see that happen again.
I agree.
That's just the way it is.
I agree. And that game was over last night as well. And if you don't fumble twice, you win the game. You know, even with the punt return for a touchdown. I just can't really get on the coaching staff too much for that one.
No.
Let's see. Alti is in Montreal. I just read that they might switch the grass field to turf. I'm a purist and love the fact that the Patriots play on grass or, if you like, sand. It sickens me to think they might play on plastic. What's your take? Football is supposed to be played on natural surfaces, and if the ground is chewed up too sandy or just a big pile of mud, then so be it. Let other teams dress their men to play a man's sport and deal with it.
I think we both agree on this.
We do.
We don't care.
Well, I just think that the field is terrible, and they need to do something about it. If they can't get it to be a real grass field, then they need to put
now,
field turf in.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
I want to know one thing. Let me interrupt you for a second. Where does it say, where is the book written that it says that football is supposed to be played on grass? Where is that book written?
I guess it's because back in the day, no one had
exactly
turf fields. But didn't the Patriots used to have artificial turf?
Should we also say, yes, they did.
So did it make the football watching any less enjoyable?
No. Well, but my question is, you know, there's a lot of things that used to be a certain way. You know, was life meant to be lived in the dark when the sun goes down? Because this electricity thing, I'm not sure I like that. I mean, I just think it's silly. Why is football supposed to be played on grass? You could say I like grass better than turf.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Fine.
A lot of players like that. I like grass better than turf. Why is it supposed to be one way or the other? Why is it not supposed to be inside? I don't understand that.
I don't know. I used to say I hated domes until I was actually in one watching a game, and I was like, this is
the greatest thing ever.
I wish they all had domes.
I'll tell you, you can do a lot worse than watching a game at Reliance Stadium in Houston, because that's a tremendous dome. Same with Ford Field in Detroit. Tremendous place to watch a game. I feel I lose nothing by not being outside.
I'm with you. I would rather see Chad Jackson and Lawrence Maroney running on actual something that's actually there instead of sand.
Right.
I mean, imagine how much faster and quicker those guys are going to be on field turf than the sand they have out there right now.
Well, that's what they said. The elements are supposed to be part of the game. Where is that written?
Well, you know what?
Is there a football rule book that says wind, rain, snow, that's supposed to be in the game?
I have a fact that can dispute all that. The team that used to have the biggest home field advantage in pro football for 20 years was the Minnesota Vikings. They played up in the North Pole there, that cold, freezing weather.
Yeah.
Once they went to the dome, while it's still very, very loud and tough to play, their records aren't even close to being the same because it's not the same. So if it's that big of a difference, why did they build a dome in Minnesota? Why didn't they leave it outside where their team had the advantage?
Right.
And if
it's supposed to be played in those elements, then why maybe was the team, when they moved inside, why didn't they continue winning?
Right.
Obviously, the elements were affecting the game adversely. Correct? Because
yes.
The better team wasn't winning, because when that same team went inside, they stopped winning.
Right.
So when all of a sudden, when the elements are not a part of the game and not helping that team, now, in fairness here, I'll point out that the Vikings, when they played outdoors, were perennial Super Bowl teams.
And, yeah.
You know, the talent went through a little bit of a drop-off when Bud Grant left, but you know,
they used to come out in the short sleeves and try to intimidate the opponents and everything. And now, if you ask me, I wish they still had an open field in Minnesota because I like to watch games in the snow, and I'm with you. I'd like to see
As long as I'm not there, I have no problem.
I like to see guys sliding around in the mud and snow, but we have to come to the realization. They have club seats now. They have all this money in these stadiums. They want a nice field. They don't.
Well, that's the other part of it. You know, in the email, and I'm not picking on the emailer because I think that his point of view is the same as everybody. but you know, you say it's supposed to be played on grass. Well, you know what? The Patriots don't play on grass.
No, they play
because there's no grass out there. There's no grass out there. Gary in Syracuse is back. What's up with the Bengals offense? The refs. The refs were wrong, but why was that game that close? The Bucs had no business being that close. The Eagles also looked bad. Miscues killed them. I didn't think the Eagles looked bad. I just thought
well, they started off slow. Our theory of the Cowboys and Eagles kind of starting off slow the next week was actually happened. But once they got it going, I mean, they actually had a sack of Drew Brees that would have given them the ball back, but there was a defensive penalty called in that game, so they could have actually won
right.
that game.
Gary actually chimes back in. He won, and I forgot about this as well, but I did make note of this when I got home Saturday night. Gary said, I forgot to congratulate you on the Louisville-Cincinnati game. The Bearcats almost pulled it off.
They had a
23-17.
They had a toss in the end zone there at the end. That Cincinnati team fights hard for some reason. And I got to be honest with you. I didn't know that Brom was back. You know what, Patriot fans? If Tom Brady goes down with a knee injury, don't even worry about it because he'll be back like 2 weeks. I don't understand these anymore. People just come back in 2-3 weeks from devastating injuries. It's amazing.
Jeff has a link to NBCSports.com. It's by our good friend
Tom Curran.
Who says, Oakland wide receiver Randy Moss may be traded somewhere before dinner time, but it won't be the New England Patriots. Reports have been circulating since last week that New England might have interest in adding Moss. This morning, the well-connected website, ProFootballTalk.com, reported that chatter about Moss going to the Patriots was getting strong. But a league source just told NBCSports.com that Bill Belichick's press conference comment that, I wouldn't say that we're actively trying to do anything, still stands. The Patriots have been dubbed a likely destination for Moss because the team has available cap room, a shortage of wide receivers, and a respectable track record of bringing on players who've been dubbed agitators and getting the best out of them, Corey Dillon, Brian Cox, Antoine Smith among them. Whether Moss is a good or bad teammate at this point probably matters less than whether or not he'd be willing to A, rework his lucrative contract in exchange for getting into a better situation, and B, work as hard as possible to assimilate himself into a team's offense and understand that he may not be an immediate focal point of an offense. Moss is due to make more than $7 million this season, which means he makes $437,500 per game. Anyone picking him up today will be committing $4.81 million to Moss if he plays 11 games for them. So that's from Tom Curran. Not really a lot of news in that, though.
No,
I mean,
it certainly
states all the facts.
He did say somebody, so maybe he got somebody important telling NBC that maybe someone of, you know, he did say somebody told NBC.com.
Right, but I think what that somebody told them didn't necessarily say that the Patriots weren't going to do this. I would have felt better about squashing the rumor with that quote. You know
yeah.
what I'm saying? Anyway, that's good stuff from Tom, and thanks to, was it Jeff that sent that in? Jeff, thanks to Jeff for sending us that link.
I mean, we don't think it's going to happen either. We're just talking about it because everybody else is.
Right, and it's the trade deadline. It's
yeah.
fun. You know, come on, it's Christmas. that's personal. It's an inside joke. David is in Wilmington, North Carolina, however, and says, Tom, most of us agree that Reggie Bush would have been a better choice than Mario Williams, but why not wait at least one full year before crucifying the Texans? Bush?
Because I did it the day they did it. I'm not piling on.
Bush has had some nice plays, but has not been the difference maker that you and many others have claimed. Let's wait and see if Williams develops over the season. Championships are won on defense, right?
Is this that same person that keeps... I mean, listen, I said it before, I said it the day, and I said it the day after, and I'm saying it now. Reggie Bush should have been the number one pick in the draft, and you can talk about him not being a difference maker. They got one win because of Reggie Bush. That I know.
Out of six games
yeah.
already. And,
so,
and I don't know what he did last week, but he was leading the league, league in receptions.
He led the league going into last week in receptions.
Right.
He had four this week. He has 38. To put that in perspective, the whole Patriots receiving corps has 41. So don't tell me he's not making a difference in New Orleans.
Now, he hasn't made a ton of big plays, I'll agree. His average on those 38 receptions is fairly low. But when you get in the ball in that guy's hands that much, it's obviously, I mean, the Saints are scoring a lot of points.
Yeah.
So he's obviously attracting a lot of attention. So to say that his impact has been minimal is not true.
That's not true at all.
And I also think that it's with Mario Williams, we're watching him. He's just not that caliber of player. It's not his fault.
No, we don't think he should have been taken first. That was the whole point. That's the argument. It's not the who's going to be better. Listen, Bush is more dynamic. He's always going to be perceived as better. The point was, who do you think should have been taken first? And none of us thought it should have been Mario Williams.
Right, and that's just our opinion. Doesn't mean we're right. We're not running NFL teams. You know, maybe the Texans 5 years from now, you know, people in Houston might be laughing. Imagine how much crap we got for taking Mario Williams over Reggie Bush. You know, here's Mario Williams, a 3-time All-Pro, and Reggie Bush is out of the league.
Right.
Could happen.
Could happen.
It definitely could happen. We're just giving you our opinion, that's all. Gabe is next up, and he says, first off, great to hear Jen writing in. Anyway, there was a lot of talk about Brady getting more in sync with his receivers over the break, but it seemed that a lot of players took time off from the stadium. Rightly so. They needed it. But who stayed, and did any receivers stay and work out extra with Brady? Well, Brady wasn't here,
yeah.
So Brady went to New York. If not, why not? Doesn't Belichick think we need to get on the same page here? I know players need to get time off when the bye comes, but our receiving corps is far from on pace with Brady. Do you think they will just let them develop as the games go by? If so, seems like a lost opportunity to me. Let's see. As far as Moss and Porter, I highly doubt it because Al Davis will probably want a first or both first-round picks, plus our seconds. Too much for players that will only drive Bill nuts. P.S., the last kick that Rackers kicked in last night's game, it looked like it was slightly blocked to me. Take a look at it. It was going smooth, and then once it passed the line of scrimmage, it started spinning sideways. Well, I definitely noticed the sideways spin, but I didn't notice a change. So I'll take a look at that the next time we see it. It appeared to lose some punch. I loved Green's reaction at the end. Preseason doesn't mean you know how the team will be in the regular season. That's not the point of what his rant was, but you know, anything that'll make you guys feel better. His point on that rant was they stood there and went toe-to-toe with the team, and they were better for 3.5 quarters. I mean, that was the point of his rant, not about that they were better in the preseason. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I know what
you're saying. To take that out of his rant is to miss the point entirely. And no wonder why he's banging the podium and stuff, because there were probably plenty of media guys that missed his point entirely.
Plus, at that point, he's just so mad, he doesn't even know what he's saying, I think. He just wanted to yell at somebody. He's just looking to lash out, and that poor guy who asked the question was the one. It was good. Listen, if it wasn't that guy, someone was getting it, because he was not in a good mood after that game.
Okay, Jen's probably going to close out the show here. Jen's back. 3 emails. Jen, welcome back. We love to have you. And we miss you. Speaking of owning up to mistakes by refs, Giants...
Who's yours is my worry?
Giants-San Francisco playoff game a few years back when the Giants muffed the field goal, but there was a penalty on both sides of the ball. Game ends. San Francisco wins. Next day they came out and admitted that the refs had messed up, that there should have been another play because a game cannot end on offsetting penalties. When Mooch was asked about it and how Fossil must feel, sucks to be him or something like that. But that is one of the few times I remember the refs coming out and owning up to a mistake. I do remember that.
Yeah.
There was a pass interference, I believe.
Most of
on
my
the
friends were Giant fans and were.
Well, I just hated the Niners, so I was yelling and screaming at the TV as well.
I was rooting against the Giants, so but they were. We all caught it right away, and for some reason they ended the game. But they did come out the next day. She is correct.
Okay, John Rook, Patriots playbook on deck. John is with us. Thoughts from the weekend, JR?
He's just pumped because Texas is in position to move back up there in that national championship race.
By the way, what an odd game there, huh? That Texas game, they fell behind 10-0.
And they had a lot of trouble in the second half.
I mean, what was the final, like
63-24?
Yes, we have ears now, yes.
All right.
63-24.
Very odd game.
10-0 game, yeah. It looked like it took them a little while to kind of wake up.
6 touchdown passes?
Yeah. I mean, hey, you know.
Well, we found out that Ohio State's pretty good. So
Ohio State is pretty
they
good.
They caught Texas at the right time.
Caught Texas
young
at the right time. That's exactly
so
correct.
Maybe they'll meet up again.
Well, you know, actually, I was more encouraged before the BCS came out this week, and now BCS is not giving the Big 12 any due.
Well,
I can't say it's undeserved, but, I mean, they're only 9th in the BCS, so there's a heck of a lot of work to do before
USC
Texas
is going to lose.
I do think USC will lose. I think that either Florida or Auburn will lose again.
I was surprised to see Florida ahead of, I mean.
Well, but again, you have to consider where Florida's loss came from. It came from, you know, Auburn, So, I mean, and I realize Texas loss came from Ohio State, but Texas doesn't have a lot left on the schedule. There is a chance, obviously, playing at Nebraska this weekend is going to help them significantly.
I'm just telling you, Texas would whoop Auburn.
I think they would, too.
So
I think Texas is more talented offensively.
We could have a whole show on this and the whole college game. But, you know, the thing that really bothers me the most about it is it's all about when you lose.
Yeah, that's...
I hate that.
Well, but see, that's just it.
I mean, it's going to play in Texas's advantage
Texas
right now.
Texas lost at the exact right time because they lost, what, week three of the season.
You know,
but
because Florida was able to win deeper into the season, they'll be behind Texas. Now, I'm not saying that Florida's better than Texas or whatever. I'm just... It shouldn't matter when you lose.
No, it shouldn't. And
but it does.
That's the great,
it clearly
that's
does.
That's the great flaw in the system. But then again, in Texas's case, they the Big 12 isn't helping them. They're really down as a league this year.
Right.
And because of that, Florida and Auburn and Tennessee and all the other one-loss teams out of the SEC are going to be ranked ahead of them. So I don't know that Texas is going to get a shot, to be honest with you. It'd be great to see a rematch because I'd love to see Texas-Ohio State again in the national championship game. Because I think Texas
could do worse. They could do worse than that matchup.
Yeah. I don't think anybody – I mean, we love Pete Carroll, but, you know, I don't think anybody wants to see us again, do they?
I'll tell you, not only do you not want
to worry about that,
but even if they were, you know, like last year and they were that good, I don't think anybody would want to see it, but they're clearly not that good.
I don't think they are.
I mean,
they're
winning every game by less than a touchdown against weak competition.
They got
Arizona
three.
State, yeah. Which was by a hair. Washington was by a hair. And so I'm thinking, now, how do they rank? I mean, obviously they're undefeated, but they're considerably above a lot of the one-loss teams that I think are better.
Yeah, well, they got a three-game stretch against Cal, Oregon, and Notre Dame. They're not going to
We'll see if
that.
They get through it. And a one-loss Notre Dame team is also ahead of Texas in the BCS, too.
Again, another example, though. Notre Dame lost before Texas did.
Did they?
Because they lost to Michigan the second game.
Texas lost to Ohio State the second game.
But was it the same week?
Mm-hmm.
No, because we were home when the Texas-Ohio State game was. We
Actually, Texas lost before Notre Dame did.
Sure, I thought it was the week after.
I think it was the week. Texas lost the week before.
Yeah, well, there goes my theory then.
Yeah, because the next week we were on the road. And then that's
See,
the
I thought we were on the road when Notre Dame lost and at home when Texas lost. I thought it was the week before, but... There goes my theory, then, if that's not the case.
Did you guys get the release on Randy Moss?
I have not. Still got another 2 hours, though. I'm sure
Well, that's what we're going to be doing. We're going to be counting down the minutes.
Say, I'm sure you'll have a lot of good Randy Moss talk.
T-minus 1 hour, 56 minutes to Randy Moss time.
What do you got for...
Well, we'll hear from Coach Belichick earlier today, and Brian Lowe will also be in, as he normally is on Tuesdays. But
taking a day off, huh? Brian Lowe's coming in?
He's coming in. We'll let him go. We'll let him rock and roll.
Maybe you can talk.
Here's the thing, though. I mean, because everybody's anticipating really nothing, I mean, we'd love to see it. There's been a lot of talk about it. In fact, I heard it mentioned even on ESPN radio this morning where John Clayton, the one and only John Clayton, mentioned it to Mike Golic that there was a possibility because the two teams were talking that Randy Moss would be considered by the
they
Patriots.
Know it's wrong.
And they went nuts. And obviously the ESPN guys went absolutely bonkers over that when they hadn't heard it yet. And they're sitting there trying to figure out scenarios under which this would work. Hey, guys, it would work, and I didn't get to them in time to tell them it would work because the Patriots actually have two first-round draft choices, and I'm sure that would be, you know, huge cannon fodder. And maybe you take one of those ones and maybe a Chad Jackson or something like that and pass them on to Oakland if that's the way that you're thinking. But they were both ready to slam dunk, or actually Greenberg more than Golic was ready to slam dunk the Patriots as the overwhelming Super Bowl favorite if the Patriots pulled off the deal.
I heard a little of that as well. And, you know, look, they clearly have the means to do it. It would have to be, and we keep saying the same thing, it would have to be on the Patriots' terms. And to me, that means they'd have to do something with Moss's contract.
Yeah, yeah. So they'd have to, what, restructure it in some form or fashion?
Yeah, maybe not necessarily for this season, but in the future.
In the future.
He's due, I think, 9
well,
and 11 or something
how much
like that.
How bad the guy wants to win. I mean, everybody says that, you know, you're in this game for two things. One, to make your money, and two, to make your ring, and not necessarily in that order. So, I mean, how much does the guy want to win? You know, if there really was an opportunity, then you would think that maybe he'd want to restructure for a chance to win the bling.
You would think so, but I don't know. If John Clayton's saying it's going to happen, I'm saying it's not.
He said it was a possibility, but a remote possibility. That was his exact phrase, a remote possibility.
Well, I'm sure there's been discussions. I mean, that's
but that's
logical.
The first time, though. That's the first time, though, that I've heard it on a national scale. I mean, obviously, guys like Clayton and Mortensen are clued in pretty well. You know, Mortensen perhaps more so than Clayton, I think. But this is the first time that deal was mentioned, from what I could tell, guys, outside of our own little circle here, you know, in and amongst New Englanders. So, I mean, in that case, I just thought it was interesting, and maybe they were picking it up from us. I don't know. Who knows, you know?
We'll let Tom's rocket shot at John Clayton go as our PFW in progress parting shot.
Oh, one more quick thing before you guys leave. I have to brag. I have to brag on your editor-in-chief.
Oh, I heard he was at your school,
He came last night to speak to my students.
Well, you should have heard how eloquently he talked about going to do that, but go ahead.
I want to tell you that Fred Kirsch was outstanding last night. I mean, I know, you know, you guys love to rip him, and, you know, and for his Pollyanna stance in a lot of ways, but he was just for that too. But he was outstanding in front of my students. I teach a sports reporting class at Emerson College in Boston, and he was great. He was riveting. He was engaging. He was energetic. I'm kind of like, wow, you've done this before.
I can see that from Fred.
He was really good, and
the
best part about it is, my guess is you might get some free riders out of the deal, because he definitely put the pinch in for interns.
Oh, look at that!
So you might get
once again he steps in it and
finally he's done something right.
That really bothers me.
Fred's
some
one thing.
Ass-
Fred is one thing. It is energetic. I'll give him that.
You know, and in doing that, I can tell you, I did it for a career day a couple of times, and you do it for like three or four periods,
right.
You know, because you get different kids cycling in. It's incredibly hard to keep doing. Like, I felt like, well, you know, the first time, it's okay. By like the fourth time, it's hard to do that. What does that have to do with being a media horse? Speaking at a career day. Jeez. Unbelievable.
How long are we going here?
So let's go talk to Fred about how what did he say, Tom? I have to speak at Clash Journalism
Schools,
John Rook. Something like that. That's how he told us.
Nice.
So anyway, stay tuned for John Rook and Patriots Playbook. For